I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Committee to order, please. And for all of the audience and the members, normally we start on time and quit early, but because of the influx of papers that changed at the end, the staff really worked to get it out, as you can well remember, because of our, whatever you want to call it, budget restraints, we do not have pages, so we have volunteers that are with the staff there doing some page work. I'd like to call the members of the committee attention to your packet. As you know, we don't vote on these bills, but we will be ranking these bills and recommending them to the bond committee. And in your packet, you've got a ranking sheet. And be certain to look at the instructions, because your number one, if you list it as number one, will be number 15. So your number one should be listed as number 15, because we have to rank them a little bit more closely rather than number one. So your top priority, if you're rating your top priority, starts at number 15. Your second priority would be 14, and that way down. And also, these sheets have to be in, stick them under Abby's door at least sometime tonight, because if they come in tomorrow morning, they're void. We have to have those in, and that's why we're under the pressure we are now. 426, room 426, you can shove them under her door. And if they're, Representative Holberg, do you have?
Yeah, do we have to choose 15, or can we just choose one or two, or?
Whatever you want to do. Right.
All right.
But don't put all 15 on three or four of them.
Don't worry, I won't.
But, and again, as you rate them, we would hope that you consider, because we have roughly in the bonding committee, if you're not aware, there are about $4 billion in requests. And the general fund monies, which we deal with on this, the general fund portion for the whole bond committee is roughly $685 million. So there, a lot of these projects are not going to make it. And so you should be, we would hope that you can have some considerations as far as the projects that are going to be ready to go and how they affect the statewide, more so a local, what we call a local project, is probably going to drop by the wayside. If it doesn't drop here, it'll drop by the wayside in the bond committee, because we're considering, not we, but the legislature will be considering projects regional significance or statewide above the local. So although some of these look like they're local projects, the implications of those go beyond the local name in there too, so you have to be concerned about that. But we would hope that you would consider a lot of these things rather than being parochial and consider geographically in different types. And if there aren't any further questions, we'll welcome the first committee. And the first group up is Representative Norton. And again, we are all of the testifiers have been notified that we're in real time constraints. And we recognize that people come from a distance. We're trying to take some of those, accommodate their problem if they get back out. So we got a little bit of shifting originally when we start, but other than that, as you know, we had a meeting the other day that basically started at 12:30 and we got through at 9:30 at night, and we don't need to do that, I think. So we hope we'd get out more quickly. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here on House File, it looks like at the top of the page, 4782. And I'm going to be very brief so that my speakers can share their information. It is probably rare but not unheard of to have a bonding proposal brought to you that has opposition. The Southern Rail Corridor for $8 million is a bonding project, I would mention is the number one priority for Olmsted County and Mayo Clinic, and also important to the City of Rochester, Chamber of Commerce, and many citizen groups. And I just have a letter that was delivered to me for the chair to share with the committee, and I'll get that to you, Mr. Chair. And many citizens, this is just such a project. There are times when we as leaders are asked to look out into the future and make forward-thinking decisions rather than just looking to today and making an easier choice. And I'm going to be asking you to do that. Rochester and Minnesota's long-term needs must be addressed, and this bill does that, difficult as it might be. The Southern Rail Corridor is a critical infrastructure project for safety and capacity. However, I think the distinguishing point for this project is the fact that it has recently secured federal funding thanks to Senator Amy Klobuchar. I would guess that there are few other projects that have federal funds already secured. Minnesota has an opportunity to leverage these funds. And I'm going to introduce our Commissioner Ken Brown to give a brief summary, Mr. Chair, if that's acceptable.
Before you do, Representative Norton, I believe you gave the wrong number. I think it's House File 2544 or 50. Wait a minute, what do we got?
2544.
Okay.
2544.
I will stand corrected, Mr. Chair. That's not what it says at the top of my form, but I assume you have the correct one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that clarification.
If you would introduce your testifiers, please.
Commissioner Ken Brown.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We appreciate the opportunity. I'd like to first recognize we have former Senator Nancy Bradis with us up here in support, a person named Mike LaPlante representing 1,300 residents of Eastside Neighborhood Association in Rochester. Tommy Leonard, who fell on the ice, couldn't be here, but wanted to express Local 343 in Rochester, supportive of this proposal. We have the city with us, the Chamber of Commerce, and Mayo Clinic. As you know, Olmsted County is a high-growth area. It's among the fastest-growing in the state. We're proud of that growth, but it comes with a lot of challenges. Among those issues, we need to expand our transportation infrastructure to support that growth that we see. National transportation experts and MnDOT are telling us that freight rail will dramatically increase in capacity and demand in the future. You don't need to look very far, but when Warren Buffett makes a $34 billion investment in the in this industry, it's kind of hard to argue against him, given his record. Recognizing these trends, taking into account the sensitivities of the community, Rochester would be remiss if we did not plan for the projected increase in that freight rail traffic. It is our responsibility and our obligation to do that. We were trying to deal with that demand to protect both residents of the city, thousands of patients, visitors, and employees that come to Rochester daily. And while Canadian Pacific has upgraded the line, it is not sufficient to meet that demand that we see coming, that the experts see coming. Southern Rail Corridor proposal is an opportunity to meet multiple objectives: increase freight rail capacity, and ensuring the economic vitality and safety of the community. But I want to be very clear, this is a proposal, nothing more at this point in time. The development and the implementation needs to go through a very rigorous demand-type process, and we're just at the beginning of that process. There are no final decisions that have been made. Our proposal is based on a possible route, emphasize possible, for the Southern Rail Corridor that addresses the concerns that have been raised with what we see as the increase in freight rail traffic. Additional work is necessary. We need to engage all parties. We're interested in all input. Have reached our handout to anyone willing to sit down and discuss the proposal. And our goal is to take the next steps as evaluating this, determine how best to address the needs and concerns of the community at large in Southeast Minnesota. The $8 million request is necessary to pursue the appropriate planning steps over the next several years. Most importantly, undertake the necessary analysis to best design a route that meets those needs and addresses the concerns. I'd like to give Dr. Forbes a few seconds also to comment from Mayo's perspective.
Thank you, Ken, and Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to comment, and thank you, by the way, for your own commitment, really, to service. I understand that. I'm here on behalf of Mayo Clinic, where I've been a physician for 36 years. For the past 12 years, I've served on each one of our four principal boards, including 4 years chairing our board that was overseeing operations in Minnesota. Mayo Clinic strongly supports an integrated rail strategy that includes the Southern Rail Corridor as a proposal to increase capacity for freight transport by rail, and does this in a way that avoids the bottleneck and the risk to patient safety that we would have in a through-town route. We've engaged, this is not a small issue for us. We've engaged with the rail carriers for many years at the federal level, state level, county level, city level. I personally have been engaged in some of those conversations. And we find this not to be a local issue, but it's an issue of national importance, and it certainly affects our operations in Minnesota. As the state's largest private employer, and we now assess by outside sources that we have an impact economically of about $9 billion a year for operations in Minnesota. We find that almost half of the patients that we manage in Rochester come from out of town. come from out of state, and in fact, some of them, of course, as you know, come from out of the country. This requires a different model for us. We're a national organization, and we're expanding our models in Florida and Arizona, and we note vulnerability about our operations in Minnesota. These operations require patients and families to make decisions to travel, and that requires strong support for access and transportation, safety and security in the environment. Now, we're very hesitant to bring such attention to economic matters because our real primary mission is a focus on the needs of the patient. But we all need to be very clear, and that is that anything that compromises the attraction of patients coming to Minnesota operations for us can have significant impact and can have very significant consequences for our state as a whole. So we welcome a open conversation about this, and we look forward to that, but we will not be shy about sharing and representing Mayo Clinic's opinions on this and the interests of our patients. So thank you.
Thank you. Do you have another testifier?
Mr. Chair, I'm not certain how much time you would like from the committee, so we are going to limit to those two, but if there are questions, we have representatives from our city, Gary Newman from the city, our chamber, as well as Eastside, the Eastside group that's here to share at the Q&A time if you need us. But I think for now we will just close.
Yeah.
And I would like to just mention in closing that we are also in the governor's bonding plan at $2 million. This request is for $8 million, so I just wanted to be clear about that.
That's correct. Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have our sound on today?
I think it should be.
Good, we're not being recorded. That's helpful.
That's right, it's being recorded.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well, maybe I just have a dead one. Hey, Representative Norton, I noticed that the bond request is specifically for a southern corridor. We were talking about concepts and process here. Can you talk about why a northerly alignment is it out of the question, or why does this say south and not north, or why does it say any particular direction? Can you talk about that for a moment?
Well, I will defer to some of the people who are in the planning. This has actually been an ongoing discussion for many, many years before my term in the legislature, so I'll let someone who can tell you logistically north versus south.
I don't think there's any magic, south versus north, and that's why we say it's a proposal. The study was done and commissioned by Mayo at the time, and they picked a geologically stable and secure route that they could take, and the southern route was there. I don't know that north is out of the question. I mean, that's why we're saying planning, design, engineering, preliminary, that says what would the best route be, and if it's north, it's north. So we're not locked in, my point is, on any particular route or line on the map.
Representative Beard.
And one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. As we think about the high-speed route to Chicago, of course, we might know a little more about this after Thursday, but which is today, I guess. I'm thinking about the line down from the north, whether it comes Greenfield through Inver Grove or comes down through Red Wing, whatever. It's going to come to the north side of Rochester somewhere. Is there any consideration about how that's going to work into this picture? Is that part of your process as well?
Passenger rail is not at this. We view that as a much longer term and less known at this point in time about what will happen there. Statewide rail plan has just been published with Rochester saying as a priority, it says this should be considered as a high-speed route in the future, but I don't think there's much planning or really work done in terms of designation for that yet.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a few comments to members here to think about a few things here. First of all, the track through Rochester right now has already been upgraded. The number of trains that were originally mentioned coming through here have gone down significantly. This project is far from being shovel ready because my guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, my guess is this thing would be tied up in the courts for about the next 80,000 years or so. And it's probably about the furthest project from being shovel ready that I can imagine. And if you look at the map there, one of my biggest concerns about this $8 million appropriation, we're not talking about $8 million. We're talking about going to $325 million. Members, that's half a biennium's bonding committee request. If you look at the information We're looking at not $8 million, but we're looking at $325 million. This is a very controversial issue in the Southeast. The farm groups that I'm aware of are very much against this, and if anything I'm saying is incorrect, I'd like to be corrected. The farm groups are very concerned about this. Rochester seems to be, and I'm not sure, but I think it's the only city that would be bypassed on the entire route here. This is definitely a local project. I have some information here before me, and the map is of Dodge County and Olmsted County, and that seems quite local to me. I'd also like to know, as Representative Beard talked about, is how does this, I mean, Rochester wants to be bypassed on freight. Well, now we've got this nice bypass. What happens on passenger rail? Do they want that to come down to the clinic? I would think they would, or does that get bypassed too? I'm not just sure how quite all of that works. And please don't get me wrong. I live in Preston, Minnesota, about 35 miles southeast of Rochester. Rochester is a marvelous city, a wonderful city. We're very fortunate where I live to have it as a regional center. The Mayo Clinic is a very large job provider, largest in the state. And so we certainly, I've got a lot of respect for the folks in the city of Rochester and certainly the Mayo Clinic. I think half my legislative district works there. That being said, we need to look at the numbers. $325 million is the projection on this, so we're not talking eight. We're talking eight for now, but we're looking going into $325 million for a local project. And I'd have to disagree with a distinguished doctor from the Mayo Clinic. I'm prone to having kidney stones. And when I get one of those, there's no train that's going to keep me from going to the Mayo Clinic. The argument that they might not come to the Mayo Clinic if a train's going through, I don't quite comprehend that. Because when somebody's sick, where are they going to go? They're going to go to the best institution in the world. They're going to the Mayo Clinic. That's where they're going. No train or no bypass is going to affect me getting a bypass at the Mayo Clinic. It is just not going to happen. So, members, this is a local project. Please look at the numbers down the road on this. There's tremendous opposition, as I said. This thing is so far from shovel-ready, and we just keep hearing shovel-ready, shovel-ready. And again, if I've said something that's incorrect, I would certainly stand to be corrected. But, Mr. Chairman, are we going to hear from the opposition to this also?
It wasn't our intent to that degree. I think you've made a pretty good statement, Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And basically, unless there's some comment, I mean, the statement's been made. It'll be in bond committee again, too, when it comes up. And I presume down the line there'd be further hearings.
And Mr. Chairman, I am on the bonding committee, too, so we'll see it there.
Thank you. Do you have any?
Mr. Chair, I do believe there are, we do need to address a couple things, and I'm just going to address the very first. I would disagree with Mr. Davidson that I never said this was shovel-ready, and I don't think anyone at this table is saying this is shovel-ready. This project, as I said in my opening comments, is about the future. This is about looking at Minnesota's future and our economy, not about a shovel-ready project. And while I very much agree that in bonding bills we need to have some shovel-ready projects, this is a different type of proposal. So I did want to address that. I never said shovel-ready. I said future thinking and future. And then I think there's some comments that were made that the folks on my right and my left would like to address to Mr. Davis.
We'll give you a rebuttal time, and I think we'll cut it off at that point on both sides.
I want to clarify very quickly. It's not $325 million ask to the state of Minnesota. The federal ask is about $195 million, local match also, and then some further state bonding in the future. So this is all both federal, local, and state is what the ultimate ask will be. We've never depicted this as a shovel-ready type project. It's a multi-generational type decision for both passenger and freight rail down the future. We know that the Obama administration, the federal, is starting to move that way, and we want to be poised to take advantage of that. And given what we see as increases and where rail is going in the future, it would be unconscionable for us not to address this in terms of the concerns the community has. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments on the medical care. Appreciate that. We'll always take care of patients in their area, but for those who are not in the area, we'll take care of the patients where it is best suited to do that.
You have any,
Mr. Chairman? To the doctor, what does that mean? What you just said about you'll take care of them in the area there it's needed. What does that mean?
Without getting into a health care discussion, which would really carry us against the chair's prerogative, there's a lot of issues about local care and transport, and we have a unique model for our operations here in Minnesota where we are the only tertiary care center in the country that is not invested in a large urban area. We are dependent on transport for almost half of our patients and access to the area. That's a very different model than we have in our other operations. It's also a very totally different model than other similar systems to ours that have in their own areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Doctor.
Thank you. At this point, we're not involved, at least this committee is not going to get involved in this debate, and we had some people who wanted to testify, and I think we'll give them the opportunity, and apparently it's the opposition. This was not our intent, and apparently the Dodge County Commissioner wants to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Leader. And just the members, I just want to make a couple quick comments while the testifiers are coming up. And, you know, I think we can agree in the Rochester community and the surrounding area that there are legitimate concerns that definitely need to be addressed. And we need to find a solution. But I tend to think and believe that these concerns can be addressed by a mitigation plan that can be developed on the current rail line. And I'd like to see an unbiased, thorough analysis that's data-driven be completed of the mitigation plan of the current rail line, and we look at those results.
And I'm certain that everybody familiar with the process realizes the final decision is not today. This is apparently a start, and I think there's a rationale for both of them. And if it does happen, as Representative Weldy pointed out, it's going to go through a process, and it's going to be much longer than what we have here, I'm certainly. Welcome to the committee. Is it Commissioner Hansen?
Mr. Chair and members, House members, I'm David Hansen, Commissioner Dodge County Commissioner David Hansen. I was recently appointed the chairperson of the Dodge County Regional Rail Authority. I have a few written comments, but if you want to look at the yellow sheet, that goes into actually more detail as to our position. Our rail authority respectably opposes the Southern Rail Corridor appropriation request because it's simply asking for bonding money to provide Olmsted County Regional Rail Authority with a freight rail bypass disguised as a high-speed passenger rail design. It's very obviously disguised as you look at the line 1.9 of the bill that the proposal predetermines the design begin at Dover in Olmsted County, run south of the city of Rochester, returning to the main line west of the city of Olmsted or Dodge County. So they're hedging that one. What you may not know is that the Mayo Clinic paid big money for the Gannett Fleming Railroad Engineering Study that recommended that the freight rail bypass begin at Dover, go through the rich farmland of Olmsted and Dodge County, meeting up with the abandoned Great Western Railroad bed at Dodge Center. It would then proceed west on the main line to Owatonna or north to the Twin Cities. It was not designed as a high-speed passenger for high-speed passenger trains. They used the word or, knowing full well that the Dodge County Regional Rail Authority submitted to them our resolution dated August 13, 2009, opposing the 43-mile bypass proposal. This is the one, by the way, that was the $325 million that you hear reported just a little bit ago. We want you to know that our position is not one of opposing high-speed passenger rail. We simply take the same position as the Federal Surface Transportation Board took in 2003 in the lawsuit of Mayo Clinic versus the DM&E Railroad Bypass. Their ruling was that bypass proposal was not reasonable or feasible. Within the Gannett Fleming report, they indicate, I quote, "The construction of a second main track through Rochester is not impossible, but would impose significant increased costs," unquote. It would seem to us that these costs to mitigate a grade crossing and other concerns would likely be cheaper than a bypass in many ways. There's a huge cost in building a new 43-mile track through a prime farmland with the many costly road crossings and bridges that would be necessary, as well as the environmental impact on karst topography, broken field tiles, and divided farm fields. In conclusion, our Dodge County Regional Rail Authority will not agree to be included in the bill as presented today. If the Olmsted County Regional Rail Authority will become equal partners with our Dodge County Authority to use bonding money to pre-design a passenger freight corridor We'll be glad to take part as long as it does not involve a bypass of the existing main line. Thank you. I'll stand for any questions. I have members of our rail authority here to answer them if I can. If there's any questions you have,
I don't believe.
And by the way, this is our. There's seven reasons on here. You'll find all seven of them. And rather than to read them, I thought I would get this far. And if there's any further questions, we'll try to.
Thank
answer
you.
Them.
I think we've aired this project to the extent that we didn't expect. And further than that, it appears to me there'll be a lot of hearings going before anything really developed much further. So I appreciate your comments. There are no questions, Representative North. If you Representative Demmer? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This really isn't a question, Mr. Chair. I just need to speak. This, as you know, this freight line goes right through my district and Representative Welty's district, and it's been a huge issue for many years. We're talking 10, 15 years this has been going on, and I think there are good people on both sides of this, Mr. Chair, as you've heard. You know the facts. I'm not going to go any further than that in terms of who's for and who's against at this point in time. I think the best interests of the public will be served as we get these facts in an objective manner. MnDOT is talking about putting together a study that was in the governor's plan that we heard the other day. And I think there's questions about facts, there's questions about motives, there's questions about why both in the rural areas and of course the Mayo Clinic and all the employees of Mayo want a safe environment, and we all want that. And I think, Mr. Chair, the best thing will be served is as we go forward and look at what we have for current freight going through, the type of freight going through, the quantity of freight going through, and then do an analysis, and MnDOT's working on this, of what that potential will be in the future, what type of freight, the quantity of freight, and what its effect on area businesses, including the Mayo Clinic, are, will best serve us and serve the public's interest. And I look forward, as we work through on that, getting the facts solid so we know what they are, so that they're not in dispute, and then make a decision going forward. And I think that's where we're at, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. Normally, that's the procedure that goes on. I'm sure there'll be a lot of hearings down in those areas, because that's the way it works. And unless, Representative Norton, if you had any other comment. There she is.
I'm back. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, just that, as I said at the beginning in my opening comments, this is a bonding bill that has some opposition. We're well aware of that. We think the facts will stand for themselves, and we do encourage you to consider the $8 million for the planning and pre-design of this project. Again, the process will be transparent, and we're happy to work with Dodge County and any of the other opposition to try to work this out in the process. That's part of what the $8 million can be used for.
Thank you
very much.
The next House File 2432, Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Holberg.
It was brought to my attention that there was a Kathy King and Orrin Johnson on the rail corridor agenda. They just whispered in my ear they were on the agenda but weren't given a chance to speak.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that, Representative Holberg. What did you say?
I can't hear you.
Oh, the question, I didn't call up the other group?
Well, some woman just came and whispered in my ear that they were on the agenda, Kathy King and Orrin Johnson, and that they weren't allowed to speak under the Norton bill.
I suppose I could temporarily bring them up. We didn't anticipate this kind of debate, and I think I had balanced both sides the way it was, and if they have a short comment to make, fine. But it's not our intent to resolve that issue today. There's got a lot of process to go through, and if you could just step up for a moment, we'll let them testify. But that's certainly better be fairly quick, and I don't know which side they're on. It doesn't make any difference. But
Mr. Chair?
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to bring this up. Mr. Chair, they did drive 80 miles and called and got themselves in the agenda, and I think it would be appropriate to hear them.
That's why I'm doing it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Orrin Johnson, a resident of Dodge County, and with me is Kathy King, a resident of Overton County. We are together the co-chairs of the Citizens Against the Rochester Bypass, and my statement is going to be very short for you. Sisseton's Roger Bypass does not support this bonding request for $8 million as requested in HF 2544 by Representative Kim Norton and its companion bill carried by Senator Ann Lynch. The present train volume on the line passing through the Rochester is 3 to 5 trains a day. Proposals to haul clean coal on this line appear to be dead to the changes of both the state and federal policies and on CO2 emissions for coal plants. The proposed route follows almost the exact route that both the courts, including the Eighth Circuit Court in 2003, and federal agencies have ruled against for a variety of reasons. This is not a shovel-ready project. It will be litigated for many years based on the above rulings. The last legal fight took over 10 years. The bypass route will not work for a passenger rail. The Gannett Fleming, hired in 2008 by the Mayo Clinic for over $500,000, clearly states that this is a freight route. Studies show a decrease in ridership on any rural passenger line due to the distance from downtown Rochester. Canadian Pacific Railroad spent $14 million to upgrade the tracks through Rochester. The total cost of the upgrade to CP in the line from Dodge County through Olmsted County in 2009 was $32 million, no tax dollars spent. The present in-town route now has seamless welded rail, as does the entire upgrade. The state is expected to contribute over $90 million to the estimated $320 million. Some say it could be closer to $700 million tax dollars for the bypass for 3 to 5 trains per day. This, when so many other life-saving statewide transportation projects are going unfunded. A rural bypass would be constructed by professional national rail companies. Local jobs on the bypass would be slim during construction. No current shippers exist on the rural bypass area. Land use plans in both Olmsted County and Dodge County prevent expanding growth along any rural line. CARB emphatically states that this proposed Southern Rail Corridor is not shovel-ready, is a wasteful expense of tax dollars, and especially inappropriate when major environmental and legal decisions have already been determined and a nearly identical route was neither reasonable nor feasible. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Our packet is the brown envelope. In your packet, we have included in there a number of informational items, including a map showing the environmental issues that were already looked at during during many years of environmental studies that go back to the early 2000s. The Federal Surface Transportation Board, with a section of environmental analysis, had done significant environmental studies, and the Eighth Circuit Court, which the decision is in here, in 2003 determined that this route was not reasonable nor feasible. The current proposal in Olmsted County is nearly an identical route. I don't want to take any more of your time, but thank you for making time for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a much smaller project with much more finite discussions. We had so many props. I had to get a volunteer to help me hold up one of them. We are so excited. North Star is open. It's just been a whole fall and winter of celebration. We had parties along the line, and it's been a long, hard fight to see this train coming. Today, you'll be hearing about three different additions to North Star, which fill in some of the gaps that everybody knew was there. I realize you'll have all a favorite project, but if you rate these three North Star projects, 2, 3, and 4, 14, 13, and 12, or whatever, that'd be great. So we're going to be purposely brief. You have a folder in front of you which has most of the details. So I'm going to turn it over to my mayor, Bob Ramsey, and they've been urged also to keep their comments succinct.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for having us today. I will be brief. In fact, I'm going to let the other two cover most of the facts here, but Our project, unlike what I heard the last case here, is shovel-ready. We are at 90%. Final design will have plans by March. So we don't have any of those issues. We have support from most every level of government that I've talked to. Met Council, I don't know if you saw the newspaper article today. Met Council is supporting our project at this point. I guess I don't know if that's final, so I can't, better not say that. But they at least came out and talked to us and said that they are ranking our project as one that should get done. So I'll let Mr. Look talk about the particulars.
Excuse me, where did you say it was ranked? Did you say it was ranked?
To my knowledge, the Met Council is just starting to have a ranking.
Oh, okay.
Or a pass or fail on any other future stops, and I think they're developing their criteria for that right now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Look. I'm a Ramsey City Council member. As background, Ramsey purchased approximately 150 acres out of foreclosure, the Town Center project. We are before you here today to request a partial funding for the completion of the North Star Rail stop, approximately $4.3 million. Current estimates are around $13.7 to build the completed project. Aside from Minneapolis, this stop would offer immediate economic benefit or development as part of the transit-oriented development. If the bonding bill is being referred to as a jobs bill, this development has an estimated job creation of 3,900. So hopefully people will be living within development, will be working there as well, but people will be traveling to it. The city has invested in and is currently operating a straight-shot commuter coach bus line into Minneapolis with a daily ridership of 250. Ridership is anticipated to grow, and as we're currently negotiating with two large apartment developers, there's about 600 units that are going to be coming in. This is one stop that can say that we'll most likely double, if not triple, our ridership with those two apartment complexes coming in. Additionally, and perhaps more importantly, City Ramsey is a finalist in the VA proposal, and this stop is located, the VA will be located immediately adjacent to the stop, which will offer veterans estimated around $36,000 annually to take advantage of the rail for their patient services. As riders become educated in the benefits of using public transit, we're confident these figures will grow. Ramsey has invested in a four-story covered structured parking, a police station immediately adjacent, as well as 24-hour surveillance offering that safety and protection from the elements. Lastly, it's important to note that adding an additional stop as part of a phase two build-out would not require additional cars, and the current capital investment for the cars and the engines would be more efficiently used. We believe that this stop will be the necessary catalyst to providing the transit-oriented development with missing necessary component, that being transit. And we believe that state monies are essential to completing the full funding package necessary for this rail station. We ask for your support on this.
May I ask a question? Representative Abler, I think some of the members of the committee maybe haven't been through Ramsey. Where is that in relation to the commuter rail and all of that? Mm-hmm. Would you just point that out to the
committee? Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's just to the west of Anoka on Highway 10, between Anoka and Elk River.
I think that's good to know.
Okay, is that a good enough?
And the other thing I noticed, I hope that the plot that they bought isn't named Ramsey. The mayor is named Ramsey, and so is this. and the city is named Ramsey. So, the next gentleman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just, in regard to your last question, there is a map on page 3 of the handout which shows the relative locations of the various stations within the North Star corridor. My name is Kurt Ulrich. I'm city administrator with the city of Ramsey. This station is the station that everyone agrees makes a lot of sense to put into the North Star corridor line. Unfortunately, it couldn't be part of the initial phase of North Star, but the time to build it is now for the reasons mentioned. It's an economic engine for the region. It brings jobs. It brings a shovel-ready project that is ready to go. We're in the process of drafting final plans, which will be ready by March, so this project has a real chance to generate jobs immediately. It has the support of the North Metro Mayors, has the support of the North Star Corridor Development Authority, as well as the Anoka County Regional Rail Authority, and the support for this capital bonding request is solid. This really gives us the opportunity to create a new town for the new economy. It has worked with the Metropolitan Council. The city has worked with the Metropolitan Council and has received a number of regional grants through the livable communities, congestion air mitigation, as well as federal grants to develop an area of development that is both environmentally sensitive and also recognizes that commuters need a safe and efficient way to get to work. So we would certainly urge your support of this project, and the portion that we're asking for capital bonding from the state would be a supplement to federal funding request. The County Transit Investment Board monies being programmed for this, as well as a local share of monies that would go towards this project. So we thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Not. I think you should get some naming rights from the mayor for putting that up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Hornstein, did you have a question?
Well, when maybe the testifiers are done, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I don't know if there's one more to go.
I think
we're done, Mr.
Chair. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say that I was on the Met Council from 2000 to 2002, and I have very clear memories of working with Council Member Haas Steffen on this town center project. So, you know, this has been going on for 10 years. They've been preparing for this for a very long time, maybe even before that. And I think the point that was made that this is really the ideal kind of development, this is how we integrate transit and housing and community development and economic activity. This is kind of a very, very good vision that's been around for a long time. And so I think that this station is really a way to just complete that process. And so I think it's a great project, and I really appreciate all of your work over a long time on this. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We're going to go out of order. The next group has a, I know they have an appointment at 1:30, so I don't know if they'll make it quite. But, the City of Thief River, Representative Olin. Where's it? Yeah. That's House File 2474. It's numbered 17 normally, I think. What, Representative Olin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We already pushed back our appointment, realizing we're going to be a little late. For your information, enclosed in here is a complete proposed project in booklet form on the multi-purpose hangar for the Thief River Falls Regional Airport. And at your convenience, I would appreciate if you'd look at that. We aren't going to go through it in detail now. What we're here to tell you, and I'll turn it over to these speakers in 2 seconds, is that this is a ready project. This will easily be shovel-ready. The dates proposed are all written right in this project outline. It's something badly needed in Thief River Falls, because right now we have the honor of being the only place in the United States where UPS planes fly in and out regularly, but in order to load their planes, everything is done outdoors because we don't have a hangar sufficient to handle them.
Did you say UPS or FedEx?
UPS presently. And oh, by the way, as most of you know, that 20 to 30 below wind chill is not uncommon. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Steve Nordhagen of Thief River Falls.
Mr. Chair and the committee for giving us an opportunity to talk a little bit about our project up in Thief River Falls. I think it would be good of me to mention the type of industry that we already have in Thief River Falls. When I talk about the people up there, we're a very independent group of people. We like to do things for ourselves, which brings us to companies like Polaris and Articat that were started by people that local people in the area. They built a snowmobile industry that is huge up in our region. We have companies like Marvin Windows, of course, people have heard of, and Matt Tracks, which is just north of us. They build a track that turns any four-wheel drive vehicle into basically a tank. All homegrown companies. We have a couple of places up there that build outdoor furnaces. One of the companies, Central Boiler, just had a profit sharing of $1.2 million with its employees. And the reason I bring these companies up is I'm going to introduce the fellow from DigiKey. DigiKey is a homegrown corporation in Thief River Falls. And what they do is they ship electronic parts. And Todd was going to go into a little more detail, but this was started in a fellow's garage, and it's grown into a billion-dollar company that employs over 2,000 people in our region, and it draws employees from about a 50-mile radius. So I'm going to let Todd Bills, the Vice President of Logistics, tell you a little bit about DigiKey, and then I'll have some closing comments as to the importance of this hangar and what it means to Thief River Falls. So I'm going to turn it over to Todd right
Thank
now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Todd Bills. I'm the Vice President of Order Fulfillment Logistics for DigiKey Corporation. DigiKey is a $1 billion company that is called the state of Minnesota and the community of Thief River Falls home for over 30 years. We are currently expanding and need to find the logistic capabilities to continue to operate out of the Thief River Falls Airport. What you see in front of you is a proposal for us to continue to make our operation more efficient and effective. What Mr. Olin had mentioned is that not only does UPS fly in and out of there, but also FedEx. We happen to have the only direct flights to both of their sort centers. We are the only company in the United States with the volume to generate that kind of special dedication and operational capacity that they will provide for us. What we do lack is the ability for them to service their planes, for them to load the planes in a safe and secure hangar that it withstands the elements. It's starting to create a cause of concern for our logistic carriers. First and foremost is the safety of operating in the extreme temperatures that happen to have here in the state of Minnesota, especially northwest Minnesota. What we're looking for is to continue to hire. We are ready to hire another 100 people today with the goal of hiring 300 more throughout the rest of 2010. We expect our business to grow anywhere from 10 to 20%. Most of that is driven because we ship to 160 international countries. Our international business has continued to take off in the back half of 2009. We were able to weather the storm. We didn't lay off any employees. We continued to hold out, and we were rewarded very, very well at the end of this year to be able to hire and continue to hire. What we're looking for is an ability to continue our operation, and in order to do that, we have to have a hangar facility that is able to support the logistics operation of DigiKey Corporation. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be for Representative Olin. On page 3 of the booklet, I think the total cost is about $2.8 million, and the request is for $825,000. Where's the rest of the funding coming from?
No, actually, the request is closer to $2.8 or $2.7 that's listed here. The request has been changed, and part of the reason that it changed is when Senator Langseth was in town, he noted during the time he was at the Senate investigating this project that our size building wasn't going to be adequate for what we were trying to accomplish, and suggested you better do some homework because you're short. So that raised the numbers, and
that's it. Any other questions? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was out of the room for a minute, so I don't know if they referenced this. I know they referenced the booklet, but if you haven't picked it up and haven't gotten as far as Exhibit E, it's very important that you look at Exhibit E, E1, and all the way, I think, to G. I think you'll discover that that without this project, what the conditions they're operating under are quite amazing and unusual.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. I'm just trying to understand a little bit more of DigiKey and the company and all that. If we were to contribute dollars towards this, would we be contributing and favoring one company in Minnesota that may be in competition with another company in Minnesota and therefore be contributing towards a little public subsidy of competition and actually taking business away from some of their business in Minnesota.
I don't believe that would be the case, Representative Welty. What you're really doing is contributing to something the city of Thief River Falls and the region needs to start with, because the money is going to the city of Thief River Falls. It isn't going to DigiKey. Right. They are obviously going to benefit from it, but we're sitting with Madtrax needing to ship things out of Thief River. We're sitting with Central Boilers, Arctic, Polaris. All of these people use the city of Thief River Falls, and every time you use our airport, you're outdoors no matter what the weather is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and just a clarification, I understand we're not giving the money to a company, but what I'm trying to get at is who's benefiting from this and would other companies benefit, you know, that aren't...
I think the entire region from anywhere within all the businesses mentioned so far and several other businesses we haven't mentioned here all benefit because they're presently using that facility and they're using it in conditions that, unfortunately, the city of Thief River Falls can't build a hangar just big enough to handle the conditions they're having. I think it's safe to say that it's not just DigiKey that will benefit from this project. It's every single manufacturer in northwest corner of the state.
Mr. Bills, did I understand you to say that you were going to expand and what your employees were, and what was the base that you're shipping? Aren't you shipping to all three continents? Don't you go over the top of the globe? And you ship 24 hours a day, correct? Or would he explain that?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman. We ship all over the globe. We go over the top or around. We get there from everywhere. We were able to ship internationally in about 57 hours. If I may, Mr. Chairman, to clarify the question, the competition within the state of Minnesota would be nil, actually. Where you're competing against is our competitors in Arrow and Avnet that are based out of Texas, California, and Massachusetts. So, not really competing against anybody in Minnesota. I hope that makes everybody feel better, so we're not taken away from St. Paul, Minnesota, or Rochester. I heard the Rochester request. But what we do is the ability, we shipped 1 million packages last year that are from our international customers. That really holds the basis and the true growth for DigiKey Corporation. DigiKey has been able to plateau with our North America sales, but our international sales have grown at 115% year over year. We see our international markets in Europe and Asia being the driver behind our growth and our expansion, Mr. Chairman. The 100 employees and team members that we need to add now are to service our international market. That international market has to be supported by the logistic capacity of the airport, and the only way we can do that with our carriers in UPS and FedEx and DHL is to be able to put facilities in place that will able to allow them to operate the 24/7 that you mentioned, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rowland, I don't know, you said that this amount had been changed, but in the bill that I have in front of me and also our rating list, we still have 825,000 as the amounts. I don't know if it's officially been changed anywhere, number one. Number two, most airport projects involve some local match. They use state airports fund money. In many instances, carriers actually construct their own hangars and lease the space from, MSP, you've got FedEx, et cetera, that have borne the cost of their own. So what were you going to build for $825,000 before Langseth got up there and said, oh, no, we need to go to $2.7 million? And are you going to amend your bill and then talk to me about why aren't there any partners here?
Representative Ola.
I would intend to indicate that the bonding bill in front of you today is actually a $1.8 million request. So it's, I don't know where the 825 figure came from, but it is considerably bigger than that to start with. Always has been.
Representative Holberg, you don't happen, you have 2474. He had another bill, and that was... It's 825 on 2474. The other bill you withdrew is comparable, 2440.
No.
Yeah, it's 825 on the bill.
That was never the number that it should have been. I don't know exactly where that number came. That was probably the, I don't even know where that number came from, because that number is far from large enough. And obviously, I can't amend any bill until the session starts, so at this stage, I couldn't do it.
I was going to say, Representative Olick, if this were to pass or go to the bond committee, an amendment would have to be in the bond committee.
Right.
Representative Holbert?
First of all, you obviously signed the green jackets that had $825 million on them, so, I mean, that's how this bill was introduced, so I think that's where that number came from. But talk to us about why there isn't any local match. I don't understand why you're coming to the state for the entire cost of a project, and if this project doesn't qualify for the state airport funds money, why not?
The mayor, you want to address that? Or?
Well, as far as the city of Thief River Falls, we have got the infrastructure in place. This hangar will be put up next to our apron that we already have in place that the city of Thief River Falls has built. So the city does have money into this game right now. The problem about the city coming up with more funds to do this, we have one of the lowest tax capacities in the state of Minnesota, one of the highest tax cities in the state of Minnesota, and for us to fund this without the help from the state, it's impossible. It will not happen. And my concern about this not happening with the story that you've heard from DigiKey and their growth that they have, they have publicly stated by 2013 they will outgrow this airport. And if we aren't proactive in supplying them with the infrastructure they need to ship their packages, DigiKey will go elsewhere. And if they do have to move, I am quite certain that will not be in Minnesota. So you're looking at thousands of jobs leaving the state of Minnesota if we don't provide these folks with the infrastructure they need. And I don't mean to highlight just DigiKey. This is a regional airport that serves a great number of industries, great industries up in northwestern Minnesota. And it's just that the way we deliver our products that we make up there has changed so dramatically, and we are way behind the city is or the for providing infrastructure to move things the way that they need to be moved. So the city does have skin in the game. We've already done a lot of things, and we will continue to do everything that we can. But given our low tax capacity and the level that we are taxing our citizens, it will be this will not happen unless the state helps us out.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not questioning the validity of the project. I am just in my years of being on the Transportation Committee. When we see airport improvement projects, generally there's participation by the State Airports Fund. There's some collaboration. Does this project qualify for State Airport funds money? All these pilots pay all these landing fees and everything, and this money goes into a pot. Have you pursued that? And if so, what were you told?
Representative Owen?
I don't believe they pursued it, but part of the reason would be that fund was pretty well eliminated a couple of years ago by a governor's action, and at this stage it's never been replenished. There's really no adequate amounts of money even anywhere near that fund to do this project.
So, Mr. Chair, were you turned down by MnDOT?
Representative Olin.
No, we haven't been turned down by MnDOT because we have went here first hoping to secure an adequate amount of money to handle the project.
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. How many daily operations do you currently have at the airport, and what do you project over the next several years if, you know, these international, you know, activity continues to grow?
Mr. Chairman, are you looking for DigiKey operations or operations in general, sir?
Overall. At the airport currently, daily operations.
I'm going to let Mark Borseth answer that question. He's a lot more familiar with it.
Hi, my name is Mark Borseth with the City of Thief River Falls Engineering Department. And our airport currently has commercial flights about a little over 500 operations a year, and in addition to the freight operations. And those are basically...
For DigiKey Corporation, we fly four flights in and out for UPS, 3 for FedEx, and 1 for DHL, and then extra flights as needed based on volume. So 10 flights a day for just DigiKey operations alone.
So, Mr. Chair, so it sounds like so 10 flights for DigiKey and maybe about 1 to 2 a day for Delta. Is that pretty much?
Yeah, Delta has one outgoing flight in the morning, one in and out in the middle of the day, and an arriving flight in the evening.
Okay. Is there any local activity? Does a technical college have a mechanics program up there or not? Representative Nolan?
Found in this document at the end of it is a letter from Northland Community College Technical Operation from the aviation director indicating their interest in this program and their need for
the technical
services
college
too.
Has an aviation program, right? Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, in part, I think Representative Holmberg's on a good point. And if we have Representative Beard just sitting down with us, we've been talking about the State Airport Fund and how those fees that we've been collecting from flights and from pilots, we're not spending on the airports. And I know Representative Beard has been dogged in trying to restore that fund for projects just like this. And I think Representative Hornstein's also on a good point. It would be good to hear from the city as you amend the bill to also hear about what projected increase would be, what the use is, a little bit more of the numbers, maybe what the projected growth is. It sounds like if DigiKey's gone from $400 million to $1 billion in a five-year period, one would imagine maybe the use is projected to go up as well. This would be wonderful information to have. Also, I think Representative Holbrook raises a good point. As you grow, I would have to imagine landing fees and other fees increase as well, which are help the local economy. So perhaps that information could be put together, but as we all know around this table, the State Airport Fund would be a difficult road to hoe, given that fund's been drastically depleted.
Any further questions? Mr. Mills?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, one more thing about the stake in the game and DigiKey's commitment to the community and the state of Minnesota. We're currently in the plans, just so you know and are aware, to build a 1.2 million square foot facility in the next 2 years. That will add an additional 600 employees to the DigiKey Corporation. It will allow us to ship 30,000 packages per day. As you can see, as the mayor mentioned, by 2013, we will outgrow the logistic capacity of that airport. So we are currently looking, if you look at our projected growth, we will be at $1.3 billion by the end of 2010, and we think we'll be double in size within 3 years. So that is our commitment and our goals, and we think it's very obtainable based on our international market share now is 0.5% of the electronic components market.
Mr. Mills, you've experienced that growth even in a downturn, is that correct?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. We have been able to weather. Last year was the first year that we have ever posted a loss in sales. We started the year and the first 6 months of the year at 20% year-over-year reduction in sales. We ended the year at 6% down year-over-year, a deterioration of only 6% of our sales in probably one of the worst years ever for any economic climate out there.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Glad you came back.
Yes, I'm sorry I had another deal I had to attend to quickly. I'm glad I made it back for this one, though. It was further down the agenda. I wasn't expecting it to be here when I walked back in and got my chair. But I'm aware of this situation. They've been stopping by to see several of us, I'm sure. Maybe the comment's been made. Thank you, Representative Morrow, for your comments about the airport fund. However, as we talked about in committee on, what's today, Thursday? Tuesday. The airport fund itself does not apply to buildings on the airport as much as it does runways and hard surfaces that are open to all comers. So it may not be necessarily a source of funding for this. However, because the general fund does owe it, maybe we've got a peg to hang the hat on for another project like this. And just to keep my comments brief, I'm aware of a lot of background on this, and I think it was one that merits our serious attention and would speak favorably of it.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Beard, we use him as our aviation and airport person on the committee, and he stepped out. I didn't know why. There are no further questions. Did you have a question, Representative Hausman? No.
No.
No further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. I think you have your another appointment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you very much.
See, the next one This one? Oh. We another person has a meeting they have to attend, and we're going to move one up at a number 18. Red Rock Corridor, Commissioner Peterson? Or, yeah, Bigham? Oh, she's here. Representative Bigham.
Hi there, Mr. Chair. Good to see you all again. Can I proceed?
Yeah.
Okay. House File 2467 is a $500,000 request for bond from bonds to the proceeds to the Met Council for a grant to Washington County to construct a park and ride, and also for acquisition of engineering and real estate property. And this Red Rock Corridor is very important to our area and in my district, from Hastings stopping in St. Paul, continuing on to Minneapolis, and it's a commuter rail, and something that all the local governments are really excited about the potential and future investment in it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my county commissioner, Myra Peterson, and the chair of the Red Rock Corridor Commission.
Welcome
Thank you.
To the committee.
Representative Bingham. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to thank you all for allowing us to testify this afternoon. I am Washington County Commissioner Myra Peterson. I'm also chair of the Red Rock Corridor Commission, comprised of local officials along the corridor and the Prairie Island Indian community, as well as Canadian Pacific Railroad. You all received your ticket to the Southeast Metro. And we have indeed 100,000 new residents that will be moving into the Southeast Metro in the next 20 years. This is your ticket. It tells you about the Red Rock Corridor. We did announce, we did complete the alternative analysis in 2007 that examined the cost effectiveness and ridership potential for all types of transit, and determined that commuter rail is the best long-term transit solution for the corridor. Similar to the effects of the North Star Corridor, commuter coach service will be initially developed to build the ridership base. The transit stations are being designed and built to accommodate commuter coach bus service in the interim and commuter rail service in the future. Improvements to track capacity and safety upgrades, including lights, crossing gates, and additional track, are a three-for-one investment: high-speed rail, commuter rail, and freight trains in the corridor. I would like to now turn it over to Hastings City Council member and downtown business owner, Barb Hollenbeck, to discuss the request that is before you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Myra. And Chair and committee members, my name is Barb Hollenbeck. I sit on, I'm a Hastings City Council member, and I also sit on the Red Rock Corridor Commission. And the request that you have before you is for the purchase of property, design, and construction of a park and ride facility along the Red Rock Corridor. The City of Hastings has taken the initial steps to move this project along by securing property in its historic downtown for the construction of the park and ride facility, extending transit service to Hastings, which then will provide service to the entire 30-mile Red Rock Corridor, is a key component in the city's vision for revitalizing the downtown area and increasing mobility and access to transit for its residents. As a local business owner, providing transit options will increase foot traffic and activity in the downtown core, leading to a stronger local economy and job market. The station area is also ripe for redevelopment, and the park and ride facility will act as a catalyst for future investments in downtown Hastings. We currently have a new business downtown called the Second Street Depot, which is adjacent to the proposed park and ride facility. So already we're, even with the mention of the Red Rock and the potential of the park and ride facilities, already spurring business and entrepreneurs in the area. So I thank you for your time today and your consideration, and this park and ride is just our first step in our long-term vision for the City of Hastings and transit in general. Thank you.
Thank you for your rapid and good testimony. Any questions from the Representative Hortman?
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a very brief comment. It sounds like the Park and Ride is located within downtown Hastings, and it's just my recommendation is we've done a great job on the North Star commuter line, but I think you can do even better at locating the stations where somebody could take a train to Hastings and then walk around, and not to have the Park and Rides, whether they're in Cottage Grove or wherever, so far out of the city core and the things people might want to see that they can't get there without a car.
The city has been planning this for at least 20, 25 years, and we've got secured adjacent property around the station, and we're ready for transit-oriented development, and our downtown is on board and ready to participate. So I thank you for your comment.
Any further questions? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us how much state money you've already put in to this corridor and what you have to show for it? And then on the last page of your handout, your $3,600,000, I'm assuming that's your operating subsidy, and where that money might come from.
Commissioner Peterson?
Well, let me go backwards. We have done the alternative analysis. We have done, we've just made an agreement that we've entered into with the City of Newport for a memorandum of understanding to build Park and Ride in the City of Newport. It's a redevelopment area, and it's an opportunity to develop transit-oriented development in that area. So that I know we've done with the money. We've also taken some of those dollars, and we are working with the city, the County of Ramsey, the City of St. Paul, to work in the Hoffman Yard. So we've taken some of our state and federal dollars in that area to do development.
Representative Holberg?
Have you spent all the money that we've given you thus far?
Once the dollars that we have before us, we are spending in the City of Newport with that with the transit station.
And then the $3,600,000, is that your estimated operating subsidy? And if so, where do you think the money's going to come from for that?
I believe she didn't hear your question.
Okay, that is a separate request that we are asking for. It is not part of this request.
But, Mr. Chair, maybe Representative Bingham knows this. The $3,600,000, what is that for, and what funding source do you expect to tap for?
You want to have that bus gentleman operation. Testify?
Yeah, that's for bus operation.
Yeah, it's for bus operation.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll try one more time. And where does that money come from?
That is, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, that is dollars that we are requesting for an initial startup fund. At this time, Hastings does not have any bus service, and this is to... And it's not part of this request. It's a separate request. What we're asking for these dollars are for $500,000 to construct a park and ride in the City of Hastings. There will be a separate request for initial bus service to go from Hastings to Minneapolis and on to St. Paul.
And I understand that, but who are you going to ask for the $3,600,000? Are you going to CTIB? You going to Met Council? You going? Where do you think that money's coming from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I think at a later date, maybe general funds, shop, general operation funds,
state general funds.
At some other point.
All right. Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, thank you very much. And now we're back. I think we can get back on schedule. Representative Wagenius? It's number six on your numbering sheet. Representative Lucinius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I am here with City Planner, Senior City Planner, Mark Gerner, and we are going to talk to you about the Hiawatha Rail Corridor. I was one of those very fortunate folks who was here in the legislature when this very committee recommended the first $40 million put into the Hiawatha Corridor. People thought it was going to be successful, but not nearly as wildly successful as it has been. And it's even with that wild success, there is this infrastructure can be used more intensely than it is being used right now. And there are impediments, and what we are coming to talk to you about is removing some of those impediments so this particular rail line can be used more intensively. And I'll start with the most obvious impediment, and that is that when the Hiawatha line was built in conjunction with Highway 55, and when Highway 55 was rebuilt, MnDOT took some of those, you know, those massive tower lines that hang over a road like this, took many of them down north of 38th Street and put up monopoles, which means that you could do your development under and around rather than the old way. But south of 38th, they didn't do that. It turns out to be a real impediment. And that's what we want to talk to you about with this project. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our senior project coordinator.
Thank you, committee members. My name is Mark Garner. I'm a senior project coordinator with the City of Minneapolis's Department of Community Planning and Economic Development. You're familiar with the success of Hiawatha, both as a transportation improvement, the state's first transitway investment, and also for the economic development and the national recognition that is achieved for its design, and as the first piece of the emerging regional transit network. Fully realizing the potential, both transportation and land use, in the Hiawatha Corridor requires additional public investment coordinated with private investment in these transit station areas. The station areas become stronger magnets for private investment when public infrastructure investments are coordinated in ways phased with development in these multi-jurisdictional transit investment and improvement districts. The purpose of this request is to ask for $3.35 million for infrastructure for transit supportive development. What does that mean, transit supportive development? One example is that housing development close to neighborhood transit stations has been demonstrated by the Transportation Research Board to reduce automobile trips made by these households by as much as 15 to 50%. Benefits are usually concentrated during the peak periods of automobile use on the region's highway and arterial road system, significantly reducing congestion during these periods. Both Minneapolis and Hennepin County are strongly committed to making investments in the corridor. We have strong plans that both establish land use visions, provide regulations, and we are already making investments in these areas in transportation infrastructure, also in development projects that have generated increased ridership and encouraged further transit supportive development in these stations. However, some legacy infrastructure and poorly located utilities remain significant barriers to redevelopment along this evolving industrial rail corridor. And to date, most redevelopment has occurred on sites that are the easiest to assemble and develop, and not necessarily those that generate the most support for transit and the strongest connections to the neighborhoods, safer pedestrian and walking environments, and safer stations. And many of the prime sites closest to the stations and best positioned for development that maximizes transit ridership, significant existing utility barriers and infrastructure deficiencies exist. In the Franklin Avenue and 46th Street station areas particularly, multiple power lines,
derelict land within unused segments of the railroad corridor, and other utilities, including water and sewer mains, remain significant barriers for pending redevelopment expected within the next 5 years. And many of these barriers have to be addressed before development can occur and cannot be addressed on a project or site-by-site basis. This request is for $3.35 million to modernize or relocate utility infrastructure in the rail corridor that is a barrier to successful transit-supported development near Franklin Avenue and the LRT and the 46th Street LRT stations. State funds would be utilized for the high-voltage power line modernization, which is essentially moving them from twin trellis towers that are located as much as 135 feet apart, and create no-build zones within which development and effective pedestrian environments and active public spaces cannot be created, to allow them to be concentrated onto a monopole system and relocated as part of the rationalization of utilities corridors that can serve the new development that is emerging at the station areas rather than the old land uses, while still providing infrastructure services on an interim basis. The utility relocation, $3.9 million, the request is for $3.35 million for the utility modernization and related property and easement acquisition at these two stations. $3.9 million is already committed in local and federal funds for proposed transportation and infrastructure projects at Franklin and 46th Street. And the utility relocations will be included as part of these projects as they are implemented over the next 4 years, with transportation project at Franklin Avenue scheduled to move into construction next year. The utility relocations support four pending development sites. They are close to the stations, and they also would support long-term development potential of numerous other sites around both of these station areas. Your packet includes a number of photographs that illustrate the challenges posed by legacy infrastructure in the rail corridor. Several project plans and conceptual designs have been included as well, illustrating the phasing of the infrastructure investments with development at the stations and the opportunity to rationalize the infrastructure corridors to support the emerging land uses near the station if these investments are made in a phased and coordinated manner. Together, these investments can help us to further strengthen the progress in the Hiawatha corridor. Already since 2000, 7,500 housing units have been built in the corridor, almost 2,000 of them around neighborhood stations that truly meet the but-for test, that but-for the investment made in the Hiawatha corridor, development in these emerging station area neighborhood centers would not have occurred. Thank you.
Are these utilities, are they on public property or under easement?
They are on private property. New property acquisition would have to occur in order for the utilities to be relocated. In one case, there is a water main that is on public property.
Representative Hollisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my bill was the last on the agenda the other evening, and so I think many people around the table may not have been there anymore. But if, for those of you who were here, you may recall we had sort of an umbrella bill that would apply to all of the lines that would do this. And I think at that night I mentioned that Representative Reinhardt had also asked about if passenger rail moves in that direction. And the proponents were suggesting that would be an appropriate addition. And utility relocation was one of those things listed in the bill. So that is another way we can go to have a bill that makes this eligible for something that will be done on all the lines as we go forward.
Did you have any further comment? Question?
Is it on here?
Apparently no other questions. You're talking about the number one item on that sheet, Representative Hausman.
It was House File 1743, Transit Improvement Area Program.
Yeah.
About between a half to two-thirds
right,
down.
Representative Hausman, are you implying that would be in addition to this, or that would be covered
well,
by
Mr.
this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm certainly not in opposition to this. I'm just saying that bill did this for the whole system, and it's another way we might go, that this would certainly be one of the projects that would qualify.
Any further questions? Not? Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Next bill up is Representative Murphy, House File 2500. Northern Lights Express. Boy, we're going to get all the tough ones out of the way. I think we should come back this evening.
I think we very well might be for my second one. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here again to talk about the Northern Lights Express, and with me is Representative Newton and Bob Mazzaline. And Representative Newton and I just want to kind of grease the skids, and then Mr. Mazzaline can answer questions and give you the true details. But of all the proposals that you're hearing today, the Northern Lights Express is the most advanced in the planning process, and to make us eligible for federal high-speed railroad funding, and we are behind for our federal to make our impression with the feds. And Representative Newton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was talking with Representative Murphy before this, and I think we have to call this the Eastern Minnesota Regional Rail Passenger Rail System, because really we're serving the area from the Twin Cities up all the way up to Bowabic with this rail system. And it is a regional system. It includes a lot of counties, and I think that we have to look at it not as the Duluth line or the Coon Rapids line or the Cambridge line, but it is a regional line. One of the things this line will serve is the Anoka-Ramsey Community College, which has a satellite college in Cambridge, and we have students moving between these colleges. One of the things that President Pat Johns at the Anoka-Ramsey Community College has done with the Northern Lights, North Star Rail, is he's providing bus transportation to have students picked up at the stop for the rail system in Coon Rapids and transported to the campus and then back so they can take rail to go up to Elk River or Big Lake. He's also looking at doing the same thing with this at the stop in Coon Rapids, so we'd have that sort of synergy with our community college systems there. One of the other things, I think, with some of the lines like the Bowabic, or not Bowabic, but the Botno line and Red Rock, you're looking primarily at bringing passengers into the Twin Cities in the morning for work and then out in the evening. This line, by going to Hinckley, I have visions in my area of seeing a lot of senior citizens like myself getting on the line in the morning, going up to Hinckley to the casino and making sure we're back by the 6 o'clock news in the evening. So I think you're going to have transportation going both ways on this line. And with that, I'll pass over to Mr. Mazzaline.
Mr. Mazzaline.
Chairman and representatives, thank you for hearing us today. I guess the Northern Lights Express is a proposed 155-mile-long intercity passenger rail service operating at speeds of up to 110 miles per hour. A handout had a map attached that gives the stops along the corridor that I think have been discussed. The intercity passenger rail service, I'd like to make kind of a distinction for you here today. It's administered and funded through the Federal Rail Administration, not the Federal Transit Administration. A number of projects you've been hearing today are FTA funded. They're the commuter, the light rail types of projects. This is a true intercity FRA project. And a big distinction is that We're hearing just now that projects around the country are receiving the federal economic stimulus money. We're just learning of who got funded this morning. And you'll see the projects that were ready in Florida, in New York, Chicago, California, have received the bulk of those dollars because they were ready with projects to receive the funding. $8 billion or so is being distributed, and so far we've learned that Minnesota has received $600,000. So there's not many projects in Minnesota that are prepared and ready to receive federal monies for these types of projects. NLX has been working on getting ready for this funding and get ready for this project for the last 3 years now. We've completed work in accordance with the FRA, and it's a very simple manual that they put out. It gives a progression of how these projects are developed, and we're kind of in the middle of that progression. In my handout, page number 4, you'll see a page in here taken right out of the state rail plan, and it shows you where NLX is in relationship to this federal manual. The state rail plan follows it almost exactly. Starts at the top with projects, inclusion in state rail plans, and so forth. And we're kind of in this middle section here right now where we're developing our plans needed by FRA to complete this work. They're all listed on page number 3. Service development plans for the corridor, management plans, and so on and so forth. And it's very distinctly laid out. There's not a lot of room for manipulation or discussion. You have to do these things, and you get them done. And with that information, you then become eligible for federal funding. And as I've mentioned earlier, not many projects in Minnesota are eligible right now. We hope to be very soon, by the end of this year. We'll complete the work necessary to become eligible for those dollars. We need your help. We're asking you for $3 million to complete this work. The rest of the work shown on page 4. We're also asking you for $10 million in construction. We hope to be construction ready in year 2012. And that funding formula or funding approach is listed on page 5. And I guess with that, I'll answer any questions.
Any questions? In other words, you're asking for $10 million for future construction in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I presume I'll ask the question rather than Representative Hausman. Why do you need the 13 this year?
We don't need the 13, all of the 13 this year. If you look at the bottom of page 5, you'll see where the dollars are anticipated to come from. The federal FRA, 80% at $492 million. The state at $91 million. And our local group, the NLX group, $32 million. What we suggested here, and it's just a suggestion, is that we start setting aside those construction dollars now, so the amounts we need in 2012 aren't that great. But no, we do not need the full $13 million now. We do need 3 to continue with the work.
I guess the question I was really asking, mm-hmm. if it wouldn't come, you certainly would need the $3 million right now.
Yes.
That's
mm-hmm.
the point I was Mm-hmm. Any question? Did you have your hand up? I couldn't see you. If not, I believe that takes care of it, Representative
Thank
Murphy.
You, Mr. Chair.
If you want to
Thank
stay you. Put, we probably could move the, you have the airports. That, I hope, would be shorter than this, too. So this is real short. We appreciate that. Is Mr. Ricks in the audience and join?
Yes, he is. He's right here.
And thank you, gentlemen. And that'd be number 16 for the, on your sheet.
And 15 when you're voting.
Representative Murphy, you just want to tell what's going on before Mr. Ricks? Or
thank
what?
You. Pretend that I'm a foot taller and quite a bit leaner.
And I have a deep voice. And I live in East Andalus.
Pretend that I'm Tom Huntley.
I can recognize you now.
House File 2495 is for a new airport terminal in for the northeastern Minnesota region. And Brian Wright, Ricks, is the director of the airport authority, the airport, and he knows all the answers.
Mr. Ricks.
I hope so. Chairman Leader, my name is Brian Ricks, and representatives, I'm executive director of the Duluth Airport Authority. Thank you for your time today. You do have some information in front of you that I'll go through very quickly. We've been working on this project since 2003. It's really in response to post 9/11 security requirements. The existing terminal that was designed in the mid to late 60s is no longer works in this security environment. It also has numerous FAA, does not meet ADA requirements, and Homeland Security requirements as well. We commenced project formulation in 2003, and the Federal Aviation Administration and Duluth Airport Authority funded first phase design in 2008. The issues are there's substantial passenger check-in congestion in the first floor of the building. When passengers go up to the second floor, there's again, it's a very narrow space as security requirements have changed, so there's substantial congestion prior to the security checkpoints. And then once passengers pass through security, there is inadequate seating and space in the sterile hold rooms. There are also no restrooms in those rooms. There's no concessions in those rooms as well. The only options that people have once they're in security, if they have to use restrooms, is to take their bag, go back out through security, and go back through the whole process again. Obviously, TSA and the airlines want to get passengers through security quickly so that security does not delay the flights, but again, this is the situation that that we have. We also have some FAA issues where the as FAA requirements have increased over time, when aircraft are parked at the terminal, the tails of those aircraft are actually penetrating what is supposed to be restricted airspace. This is one of the reasons why FAA is interested in moving the facility further south, getting it away from the runway, and resolving that issue. Duluth is an international port of entry. We receive over 350 international tech stops. These are aircraft, large corporate aircraft that are coming from Europe that are destined to the West Coast that need somewhere to stop and clear customs and purchase fuel. Duluth is doing a nice job of generating that traffic because it falls right under the Great Circle distances, and this traffic can come in, get in, and get out very quickly, and it benefits us because these aircraft are buying fuel, which goes into the state airports fund. They're paying landing fees, and so it's a positive revenue generation for us. The Duluth International Airport is also the number one diversion airport for Delta Airlines for domestic and international traffic. It's because we have a 10,000-foot-long runway. We're very close to the Minneapolis hub. And so we have to have facilities in the occasion that one of these aircraft is sitting on the ground for over 3 hours. We need to be able to unload these aircraft, which sometimes seat in excess of 250 passengers. We have strong commitment on funding. The FAA recognizes airports with passenger service as high-priority projects. They realize what air service means to the region. We have funding commitments of $52.7 million. Our state bonding request of $11.7 million will complete the project and is needed to tie all of our other funding sources together. We appreciate the support we received for Phase 1 from the state bonding. It leveraged, again, $6.9 million of federal funding. We advertised the project as ready to go, and we did break ground in July and completed first phase. So that phase is complete. Part of the funding we received for Phase 1 was federal stimulus. The federal stimulus allowed us to complete design of Phase 2. We just had a 50% complete design meeting last week, and this project will be ready to bid completely by May of this year. The $11.7 million leverages another $41 million in other funding, the majority of that being federal funding. It's a regional project. We've had air service in the community since 1931. Currently, Delta serves Minneapolis. They also serve Detroit with nonstop service. Allegiant Air is a low-cost carrier that has been serving Las Vegas nonstop from Duluth for 3 years. They just added nonstop service to Orlando in November. And on December 17th, United just added nonstop service from Duluth to Chicago. Again, air service is critical to our region. It allows us to compete nationally and internationally, and allows us to not only retain business, but to grow new business. I've included in there a picture of the service area that we receive, or that we serve passengers from, and every shaded color on there, which extends west of Bemidji, extends east to the Upper Peninsula, down south to Pine City, and all the way north into Thunder Bay. We're drawing passengers to fly out of Duluth, which, again, is good for our region. We serve, on average, between 300,000 and 350,000 passengers annually. That number will be down about 15% this year as a result of the economy, but those numbers will grow back up with the new service that I had mentioned. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the importance of this project to some of our key aviation sector tenants, one being the 148th Fighter Wing that has 1,289 full and part-time employees at Duluth International, the top fighting guard unit or top fighting unit in the country, as has been depicted by them winning the 2009 Raytheon Trophy. And so they're an important tenant of ours, along with Cirrus Aircraft, which the impact of the state of Minnesota in 2007 was over $41 million in purchased products from Cirrus alone. They make the top aircraft flying out their single-engine aircraft and continue to work on their jet project. Our aviation sector generates $1.3 billion annually in economic impact and impacts about 4,400 jobs in our community. This project certainly solidifies and brings together that sector and takes care of some significant issues we have with allowing airlines to compete in our market. I'll end there and respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got three quick questions for Mr. Ricks, if I may. You talked about customs, Brian. The international flights that come over the top from Europe that clear customs there, will they be using this facility as well, or is there a separate building for customs?
They will be, Chairman Leader and Representative Beard, they will be using this facility, and again, we need a facility that can handle those aircraft, which range anywhere from 8 passengers up to 200 passengers.
The second question, you mentioned that this is a diversionary airport for Delta if they can't land at Minneapolis. So if we build this new terminal, will they be able to actually let people off the plane if they're, instead of being trapped like another airport we know? And I'm messing with you, Mr. Ricks. It'd be more fun if Steve Lechby was in the audience so we could dig at him a little bit.
Chairman Leader, Representative Beard, yes, they will. And currently, we have a very difficult situation with the hold rooms able to hold less than 100 people, and that's critical because when these aircraft are on the ground for more than 3 hours, people have to be let off of them, as Congress recently passed, and this will allow us the space to hold up to 400 people at one time.
Great, thank you. One last question, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Great.
I'm thinking about the previous. Presentation for a rail line from Duluth to the Twin Cities, and I'm thinking about flights from Duluth to the Twin Cities, but Mr. Ricks, if I'm not mistaken, Duluth, that doesn't actually hub through the Twin Cities for most of its business. It actually goes other places like direct Las Vegas, direct Denver, and direct Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct. The new Chairman Leader and Representative Beard, the new service we have is nonstop to Las Vegas. Well, that's been in our market for 3 years now. Also, the nonstop service to Orlando that was just started, and Chicago and Detroit. So, yes, we're serving four other nonstop destinations, which, again, is critically important for our growth of business and retainage of business in the region.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Riggs, does this also include the monies in this proposal for the demolition of the current terminal?
Chairman, Leader, Representative Solberg, it does.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm just looking at the numbers here. So you need the 11.7, and then does that generate the full $33.5 million referenced on the chart in the book?
Representative,
some of that federal already used, because I'm trying to reconcile that with the other half of your page here.
Chairman, Leader, and Representative Carlson. It generates about $28.5 million of additional federal money. Some of that federal money was used in phase one.
Okay, so it would be these numbers that we're talking about.
Correct.
Here rather than these numbers.
Correct. There's a little bit of, discrepancy there.
Any further questions? Not, thank you.
Thank you.
We have a little dilemma here. We need a lot of people who have to move. If you look at your schedule, I don't know if we'll get out here by midnight, but one of the persons that wants to move up has to cut the ribbon for the Red Bull division coming back, and we certainly should accommodate that. So
the member's not here yet.
The member's not here. Representative Swales, maybe she wants to take it.
Sure.
It's Representative Bunn's bill. What is it? Number 19? In the back page.
I don't know what the bill number
is. I would, you just want to give a brief
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out the bill number, so.
And it's actually, this is Representative Bunn's bill, and she thought it would be about 3 o'clock, but I think to accommodate ribbon cutting, we have to...
In sense of my member of the committee, Mr. Chair, can I move House File 2423? I guess we're not going to vote on it, but that's what we'll be discussing. I'd like to introduce to you one of our county commissioners. This is Gary Kriesel. He will be participating in the Red Bull ceremony, and I'm very honored to have my mayor here, Bill Hargis from Woodbury.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members of the committee. I am Gary Kriesel, Washington County Commissioner, representing the St. Croix Valley communities within the county. I am also chair of the I-94 Corridor Commission, which was created in May of last year. The group is made up of Ramsey and Washington counties and the communities from St. Paul to the St. Croix River. In addition to these governmental agencies, the Commission has been actively engaging the local business community and our partners on the east side of the St. Croix River. The focus of the Commission is to begin the planning and development of the I-94 corridor as a robust transitway. This includes maintaining mobility, providing economic development and growth opportunities, and improving livability for residents. To support these efforts, the Commission has undertaken the development and completion of an alternative analysis that is being funded by Ramsey and Washington counties and the Metropolitan Council. This analysis will help to identify what the future transit vision is for this corridor. I will now turn it over to Woodbury Mayor and I-94 Commission Vice Chair Bill Hargis to discuss the request that is before you.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Kriesel. The request that you have before us is for the purchase of property, design and construction of a park and ride facility in the city of Woodbury near Manning Avenue and Interstate 94. The existing park and ride lots that we have in Woodbury and across I-94 and Oakdale are overflowing. There are over 1,500 parking spots between all three of these existing lots. Cars are parking on adjacent streets and nearby parking lots because there is no room in the park and ride lots. The demand is there now for additional spaces to be added along this corridor. Commissioner Kriesel mentioned the I-94 alternative analysis that's going to be done to study the transit options and recommendations, but the proposed park and ride would be a foundation or would be used in all the alternatives that could be developed. We also understand that this proposed park and ride facility is in the Metropolitan Council's long-range transportation plan. The location of this park and ride is supported by the City of Woodbury and would be beneficial to, as we begin to look at development of that northeast area of our city. It's a great opportunity and, as I mentioned, would be used in all the alternatives that are under study in the transit analysis. So. Again, thank you for your time today, and we would be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Are there questions from the committee? Representative Hornstein, did you have a question?
No, Brian.
Not again, recognize that Representative Bunn is here, and she brought that, and thank you, Representative Swales. Mm-hmm. If there are no questions, why? Representative
Mr. Bunn? Chair and members, thank you.
This should be short.
Yes, it is.
We have an amendment that should have been passed out for you to include in your information. I just want to explain there are two features to this amendment. First of all, that it deletes the words related to Washington County because it will be going to the Met Council. We want to make sure that's clear. And secondly, that the funds will be used for the environmental analysis, engineering, and acquisition of the property and construction, whereas the original wording was just construction. So in your final deliberations, make sure you understand the funding is for all four of those things, analysis, engineering, and construction. This, as they said, is a very vital component of a large long-range vision. From our first month in session, Senator Saltzman and Representative Wells and myself have been working on this vision for our I-94 corridor and transportation, and we're so pleased that a joint powers agreement was formed as a result of those early efforts, and we very much appreciate your support for this endeavor.
Actually, you recognize this. We don't move on the amendment that have to follow your bills.
I understand that. I just want to make sure members were aware of the language.
Yep. Representative Portman.
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add, as long as the mayor of Woodbury is here, is that I hope the city is looking at the pedestrian and bike access to this park and ride facility. I think the mistakes that get made in other places is that you can only get there by car and there's not good pedestrian and bike access. So the lighting, the trees, the bike and pet access, I hope you're looking at that.
We are, and actually I think that's one of the distinctive parts of our community, how much we use trails and it's connected. So you don't have to sell that concept to our planners. It's already part of our plan and no doubt will be implemented as this develops.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next one is be number 8 would be Representative Hansen, the Robert Street Corridor. Here. Representative Hansen, we recognize that you're a long speech maker, and I hope you cut it shorter.
That's why I brought the visual. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This House file doesn't have a number yet, but the Robert Street Transitway has been in front of this committee for a few years, and this is a journey of transit for this corridor. We had received $500,000 a few years ago for the study. Last year we had it in the bill, or in 2008 we had it in the bill. What we have in front of you today is a modest proposal for $200,000 for a project to build park and rides along the corridor to increase the ridership in this area. So these are ready to go. We already own the land, and I have Commissioner Branning with me from Dakota County and the Regional Rail Authority to talk just a little bit about the money that Dakota County is putting up as well.
For the members, it's not in the bill form. It's in the letter size. You got it? Well, welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Leader, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here before you again today. I tend to want to come back to see you more often. We are here today to need your help to provide a transfer facility in the Northern Service Center on Robert Street area. This would allow us to grow transit on this area, in this area, because we really need it to further the Robert Street corridor. Representative Hansen has been so kind as to author this bill and give us the opportunity to grow transit on the Robert Street area, and this would give us that transfer facility. The transfer facility allows for parking spaces for buses. It allows for the curbing and the sidewalk, and it's a jobs-ready program, so we can spend some dollars and put some people to work almost immediately. We have, since 2007, we've undertaken the feasibility study for transit along the Robert Street. We are now pursuing to get some not only feasibility study, but actually look at the alternatives. And we have looked at the alternatives, but have not completed that. And that'll be another bill before you later today, or hopefully later today. But this is a start in the right direction to give us transit opportunities along the Robert Street corridor.
Any questions? Representative Hausman, do you have to comment? Do you want to comment on this? That's a corridor, again.
It is an eligible corridor. It is an eligible.
No, I was just thinking of the overall, the other bonding portions.
And the way, Mr. Chair, that we did this, which I think we would still continue, is we have that one overarching transitway corridors, and then everything that you're hearing today is really an eligible corridor.
I just wanted you to bring that out. If there are no further questions, thank you. Representative Hornstein, I thought you took care of all this transit stuff.
Well, we're in the process of it. It's certainly something to keep in mind, members, as you're ranking your projects here.
Okay. How about Representative Champion? Is that yours, Brent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I am presenting for your consideration 2532. We are requesting an appropriation of $1.5 million, and that would be for bond proceeds to the Met Council for a grant to Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority to match federal funds. Just so that you have a good understanding of the Bottineau Corridor, it extends from downtown Minneapolis through North Minneapolis and the northwest suburbs of the Twin Cities, which also includes Golden Valley, Robbinsdale, Crystal, New Hope, Brooklyn Park, Osseo, and Maple Grove. Even though I've clearly outlined some of the other places or spaces that this line will go through, I believe, and I'm sure you do, is that this particular corridor would benefit all who have a desire to travel to not only this area but to the rest of the great state of Minnesota. And so we just we ask that you give great consideration to this particular request. And to my I would like to introduce Commissioner Mark Stingline, although I see on the agenda he's identified as Commissioner Peter McLaughlin. I might add he looks a little better than Peter McLaughlin.
That's on the record, Mr. Chair.
That's on the record. Oh, I'm sorry. He is my worthy commissioner, and I would like to give him an opportunity to speak to the request before you.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Mark Stingline and members of the committee. I'm a commissioner for Hennepin County, and I don't know if I'm better looking than Peter, but I'm here, and this is what you have. You know, this is probably, there's a good chance that this will be the most exciting project you'll hear today. This is an exciting, exciting rail project that starts out in the interchange, the transportation interchange in downtown Minneapolis, and will ultimately go out and feed the northwest suburbs. Now, this is an area of our county that's not been well served with transit, and with fixed rail transit, this will open up that whole area, that whole travel shed of Hennepin County. Now, these things are long in the making, and we take these things step by step. You know, my son's working on his Eagle project, and I always tell him, you got to take this step by step, and that's what we're doing here. This is the first part. You know, we've already done an alternatives analysis. Hennepin County has invested $1 million, and our engineer here, Joe Gladke, is going to talk briefly about that alternative analysis, stating that this is the best mode is light rail transit for this area. Again, the excitement here is huge because it's going through a part of Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, that traditionally has been kind of left behind. Isn't that right, Representative Champion?
Absolutely.
And it's going out into the northwest suburbs of a really affluent part of the county. So the thing that's so exciting about this, it's pulling together both ends of our county, and economically is going to be an incredible engine for development, for going both ways. You know, the freeway system kind of emptied out the inner cities, and light rail brings people back into the cities. It acts as a lifeblood, as an artery of transportation to bring people back in and out of the cities. So we're looking at this in North Minneapolis as an alternative to move people out into the suburbs where some good jobs are, and for folks out in the suburbs to come into the city where the entertainment and the arts are. And with that, I know you're under a time crunch, Mr. Chair, and I respect that a lot. But I just want Mr. Gladke, our engineer who's been working on this project in the alternative needs analysis, to briefly give you a little update on what we discovered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Joe Gladke with Hennepin County. We're currently in the final stages of wrapping up our alternatives analysis study. As part of that process, we've been studying 12 different bus rapid transit options, 9 different LRT options. We're kind of wrapping up that study, and the results of that are really kind of a narrowing down to a much smaller set, about 3 options that are really kind of coming to the top of that overall analysis. Our proposal is to move into the next phase of the project development. That would be the draft environmental impact statement. Thanks to the help of Congressman Ellison, we've secured $250,000 in federal funding for that study. We'll be seeking some additional funding from the federal government as well as part of that study. This line, as Commissioner Stenglad mentioned, this would be an extension of the Hiawatha Light Rail Line. It would start at the interchange and then serve the Northwest region. Be happy to take any questions folks may have at this point in time.
Any questions? Not. Representative Carlson.
Chair, just a quick comment. When it was mentioned that this line would run through Crystal, Robbinsdale, Golden Valley, that happens to be an area that I represent. I only wanted to footnote what was said in terms of the vital need of transit out our way. And as was pointed out, it does extend far beyond the inner ring suburbs that I would represent and into the outer ring as well. But the need is there, is my point.
And Mr. Chair, just in conclusion, this the commitment by the state of Minnesota, albeit might be small right now, will show to the federal government along with the county commitment that we are committed to this line. So I really would appreciate it.
As long as Representative Carlson made that statement, if you extend it 10 miles, it'll be a monument. That's the birthplace of the chair, I'll have you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chair. Representative Nelson.
This also runs through my district, and I will second that, or I'll write that bill up to make a monument up here to the chair.
Okay. I'll tell you where it is. Next bill up is Representative Ornstein, or Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, and I don't know who could speak to this, but as I recall, that line directly north, there are two community colleges along that. I would assume that when we do alternatives analysis, that that kind of pocket of commuters is identified.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, yes, when we look at the stations shown on the map there, there would be a station associated with both the Hennepin County Technical College and the Hennepin County Community College shown on the option A and B, respectively.
I see.
Further questions? No, thank you very much.
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Hortman?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Who had a question? Commissioner Stegland?
No, it's me, Mr. Chair. I just want to end by saying I know that we are doing some great ranking around the table today, and I hope that this is one that would be maybe 15, 14, or 13. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Representative Hortman.
Am I up next?
Mm-hmm. The next one after that would be Representative Mason. Oh, you're here. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I presume that you would like me to start with House File 2558, the
right.
Foley mm-hmm. Station. In your packet, you have a color handout that on the front, there's a lot of blue. And on the back, there's a lot of yellow. And it shows a map of the North Star commuter rail line. And what I would draw your attention to on the back of the map is it shows the stations that were missing from the original North Star. You may recall the Minnesota legislature has been considering the North Star commuter rail line for many years. And if it would have funded it in the year 2003 under the FTA formula then in effect, the line would have gone from St. Cloud to Minneapolis, and there would have been stops at Ramsey, Coon Rapids Foley Station, and Fridley. And because the FTA changed the standards, we had to cut the line in half, and we lost that portion to St. Cloud, and I believe Representative Howes will be talking about that. But we also lost three metro area stations, the Ramsey Station that Representative Abler talked about, the Fridley Station that CTIB has built with CTIB funds, and the Coon Rapids Foley Station. And I'm here to speak in favor of adding the Coon Rapids Foley Station back in. There's a huge commitment at the federal level to passenger rail right now, and what's very clear is if you're ready, you are eligible for funding. And ready means you've done your environmental analysis and your engineering. And what we're asking for $1 million to do is to do the environmental analysis and engineering for the Foley Station. The Foley Station is at the place where the NLX line and the North Star line intersect. So if you're getting on the train in St. Cloud and you want to go to Duluth, you would be getting off at the Foley Station and getting on the train to Duluth. Or if you're coming from Elk River or Big Lake and you want to go to Duluth. So the Foley Station will serve both the North Star commuter rail line and the NLX line when it's eventually built. Right now, there's a park-and-ride lot at the Foley Station, and I have a picture of the station to hand out if we have pages. I don't know if we have pages. This one. There's already a park-and-ride lot there. The park-and-ride has 1,243 parking places. Its 2008 usage was 92.4%. It's one of the top 10 utilized park-and-ride facilities in the metropolitan area. And it grew in usage over the last 5 years every year. Additionally, one of the things that the FTA will be looking at is the redevelopment potential of an area surrounding a transit station. This is in a pretty rough area of Coon Rapids. I think members of the bonding committee may remember touring the Coon Rapids Dam site and driving along Coon Rapids Boulevard to see some of the degradation in the community over time. The redevelopment potential for this station is enormous in terms of tying the residential area in to the train station and supporting more high-density development in the Coon Rapids Boulevard corridor. So, Mr. Chair, I believe that the $1 million would be a great investment to make us ready to obtain more federal funding. I have with me Tim Yantos, the Executive Director of the North Star Commuter Rail Development Authority, and Dan Earhart, who's a Anoka County Commissioner, and also, is it President?
Chair
of the North Star Corridor Development Authority. And I asked them to add anything if I missed important facts for you.
The Chairman is trying to keep this as short as possible, and I see marketing is very important. This will be the most exciting project that you'll be able to act on, listening to the previous one. So if you're looking for something really exciting to move forward on and use your money wisely, this would be the project to use it on.
They get more exciting as we finish.
Mr. Chair, if I could offer, also, we have gone ahead, we've been very proactive in this as a, I'm Dan Earhart, an Oakland County Commissioner. Rail Authority Chairman, Chair of North Star, and others. We're very proactive on this. We have already purchased an additionally two more parcels of land, well over $3 million in value, so that we're prepared to move ahead with this, and we have that land protected, and we're doing a number of things with other projects that will bring this all together. This will be the hub in the Anoka County area, bringing in people on 610 from Anoka or Hennepin County, Ramsey County. That'll then be about 20 minutes from a hub in that intermodal station in Minneapolis with, in a few years, 500 train connections a day.
Commissioner Earhart, are these kiss and rides, is there nominal charge ever considered in the future?
Mr. Chair, I think your question is, do we ever consider charging for people to park at the park and rides?
Yeah.
And my understanding is the Metropolitan Council has not gone in that direction at any of the park and rides in the Twin Cities.
No, I don't mean that they should, but I just kind of wondering.
When you have over 92% capacity filled and you're starting to run out of space, it is something you do think about.
Thank you. Any question, Representative Holmesman?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought I should ask Representative Portman if this reflects her advice regarding downtown stations.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holmesman, I think that we will have a beautiful facility at Union Depot, and that this will be a Western complement to that. I think that there'll be places where people in Minnesota can get off one train and get on another, and one of those locations is Union Depot, and another location is Foley. Does that answer your question?
No, I just remember you advised us all before that when we have these stops, they should be in the heart of town, so you can walk to the local restaurant. Mm-hmm.
This is a very walkable, bikeable location. It is very close to a large number of existing homes, And it is also very near undeveloped property that's perfect for redevelopment, like the Ramsey site already has, the high-density housing and the town center built around it. There's sort of empty industrial areas that are just ripe for redevelopment in the middle of a part of Coon Rapids that's really in decline, unfortunately.
So I thought, Mr. Chair, I so agree with her point about having these stations downtown that I thought I would just give her the opportunity to see if it applied to this one as well.
I was going to ask, too, if you could walk.
You're absolutely right, and we are already on the with the operation of North Star. We have buses that are moving around, particularly with the community college. We look at expanding that, and we're going to have a system of connecting an entire community or communities so that people can move around within that whole area, and the major connection be in the train.
It is within walking distance of the Northtown Mall and the Blaine area, the Spring Lake Park area, and Coon Rapids. So it's where a lot of residential communities come together.
And, Mr. Chair, it did occur to me that you've probably all filled out your ranking sheets by now, but because we do have that transit corridor line, a way of your expressing support for all of that system you've heard today and your belief that the whole system should be built, that would be one of the ways to rank that. What I'm just realizing that I regret is what isn't on here is the other pot of money we established last year, which was MnDOT's intercity passenger rail, which is also all-inclusive. And if that might be another thing to write in here and say, I support the whole system and statewide. But the one place where we never know where we should put some of these projects is in that area that some of it's North Star and some of it's NLX, because one of those is going to be MnDOT and one is going to be Met Council. And I think that's where we get some confusion about which pot a project belongs in. So later, anybody who has advice on that could share that with us.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is in my district, and it's really not that rough over there. Melissa just looks a little shoddy at times. This area has a lot of high-density single-family housing and a major trailer park there, which has access to the area. And it's something that Commissioner Earhart and I have been talking about for some 20 years, to redevelop this area to get more commercial in and to improve the facilities for the single-family housing. So we've got a lot of lower-income single-family housing that would benefit from this station.
Thank you. No further questions. Thank you, Jim.
Did you want me to do my next one?
Beg your pardon?
Did you want me to do my other bill or later?
Oh, 13 high-speed rail? Yeah, I presume the commissioner would be here, too. No, different?
No, I'm not sure he liked this one as much.
Okay, you're going to do that? Okay.
I'll be very brief.
Be number 13, that doesn't have a bill number.
It's XXXX. Mr. Chair, I asked Matt Burris to draft for me some language that would direct MnDOT to spend the $26 million that we appropriated in 2009. So this particular proposal is listed on your list as policy language and not money. And I know I was in the Rules Committee when they spoke about the statewide rail plan. But when you read the statewide rail plan, there's been a data analysis of the viability of different lines and which ones are more viable and which ones are less viable. And so what it has done for us is create a priority list. And what XXXX would do, drafted by Matt Burris, is it would direct MnDOT to be spending that $26 million in bond authority that we already gave to MnDOT last year in 2009. And what the criteria are there would limit the funding or direct the funding to occur on the NLX line. It would direct them to spend money on North Star Phase 2. It would direct them on spending money developing the Twin Cities to Rochester line, and then also Twin Cities to Chicago via the river route. So the idea with the language that I introduced for your consideration is just to make sure that MnDOT was moving forward and spending the money that we have already appropriated rather than waiting for further direction from the legislature.
So would you anticipate this should be a rider in the bond committee?
That is my proposal, Mr. Chair.
You're going to move it as a bill. Is this is MB 128? Is that the number? Or which sheet is that?
MB 128.
Okay. Representative Hausman, did you have a question?
Nope, I'll just read it.
Any Representative Welty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And by the language and the numbers I looked at here, is if I understand this correctly, it would be the river route to Chicago and the Rochester route to Chicago that's designated in here. Is that correct, Mr. Burris?
Representative Hortman?
I think Burris? He wants Mr. Burris to address it.
Who are you asking that of?
Mr. Burris? The question I was just asking was a clarification that this would be both the river route and then also the Rochester route to Chicago.
Mr. Chair and members, the Phase 1 project identification in the state rail plan includes an alternative route through Rochester, as I'm sure you're aware. That's listed as an alternative. There's probably some flexibility for MnDOT to read the current language either way. If I were advising MnDOT, I would probably suggest that the alternative route would be included as eligible under this. But that would be a probably at the agency's discretion at this point.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that clarification. But members, I would the one thing I liked about the bill that Representative Hortman drafted is that it puts some accountability measures in here and asks MnDOT to come back and report to us about the progress that they're making on each of the lines that we move forward on in the state. And dependent, no matter what lines we ultimately choose in the end and that we want to move forward on, I think it's really important that we have MnDOT coming back annually and reporting to us just what progress they're making and where they plan to go according to the statewide rail plan. Because it is kind of left open-ended, although it does designate the primary routes in that plan.
Any further comment or question?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Newton.
Is this one that we would rank? Because it's a policy issue, and we wouldn't want to rank this with the other.
I think we can just forward that one, Representative Hausman, because that'd be a writer, basically.
Okay,
thank you. The next
I can just
one,
say one last really brief thing about it. The reason for the bill is just to make sure that they're moving forward on everything. Whether or not we get to Chicago via Rochester,
They
have clearly identified that Rochester is a viable route, Twin Cities to Rochester. And it is going to take, I would suspect, about a decade to figure out whether we can acquire the eminent domain even to get from the Twin Cities to Rochester. And we won't determine when and how we're going to build any such route unless we get to work contacting landowners. And we should do that sooner rather than later.
Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm here to present a bill for the Cedar Avenue Transitway. It doesn't have a number, but and it's on a regular 8x10 sheet of paper. And it's to request $9 million in bonding to keep the Cedar Avenue Transitway on project, on the schedule that we have. And we recently opened the Apple Valley facility, and I think that was an incredible day, and it's been very successful. We'll be opening the next place would be in the city of Eagan in the spring, and in lieu of time, I will let Commissioner Wilbrand and give you the details.
Thank you. Good afternoon again, Chair Leader and members of the committee. My name is Will Branning, Dakota County Commissioner, Chair of the Cedar Avenue Transit Group, which is 15 representatives of nine communities that are on this group, and this $9 million adds to the existing contracts and programs that we have in place. This is a gap filler to add transit stops along this to make BRT a viable transit way to the Mall of America from the communities of Lakeville. We have before us the need to include some acquisitions that were not in the first bills that we put before because of the addition of Lakeville to the transit taxing district and opening up the Lakeville transit station along, or transit park and ride along Cedar Avenue. We do not have the funds to, in the current programs, to include all the acquisitions. We're very pleased with where we are in this corridor. We're excited about it. We have a wonderful transit station built for 600. Actually, it was built for 750, but we counted the cars. We thought we had capacity for an additional 150. So we have built it for use of 600. We built it for 750, and I think we had 751 using that station on day one. So we're very pleased with where we are. We know that the corridor has the capacity and need for this. We hope to add the $9 million so we can complete the acquisition.
Are there any questions?
Any questions for the commissioner? Not? Thank you. You did a good job again.
Well, we appreciate it, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's
see. Representative Simon? May proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here on behalf of the Southwest Corridor request, which is a $7 million request for the Southwest Corridor Light Rail line.
Again, it's 2554 number, House File 2554.
That's correct. This is for the Southwest Corridor Rail line. It's a $7 million request. It is in the budget, in the governor's bill as well. It's got a lot of popular support locally and in the business community as well. Here's the cover of Twin Cities Business Monthly, my favorite prop, which urges the construction of the Southwest Corridor from downtown Minneapolis to the western suburbs. I'd like to introduce first Commissioner Gail Dorfman, who is spearheading the project for Hennepin County, and she'll make further introductions.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Leader and members of the committee. This has been a very productive year for Southwest Corridor and consideration. As you all know, I believe this corridor serves the Southwest metro area from Minneapolis into Eden Prairie. There have been six cities that have been involved in looking at this corridor, and over the last 10 years we've looked at numerous alignments, more than 30 different alignments for this corridor. And this year finally decided on a locally preferred alignment, which we called the 3A Kenilworth Opus Golden Triangle alignment. All six cities approved resolutions in support of this alignment, five of them with unanimous votes of their city council, and in the city of Minneapolis, only one council member voted in opposition to this. So there's very strong support. I don't know and don't want to weigh in on which of my colleagues is better looking, but I do know that all of my colleagues were unanimous in support of this alignment. And so we are in the process now of the Met Council. We're transitioning this project to the Met Council. They're beginning to look at the locally preferred alignment and amending the transportation policy plan. That will happen this year. We anticipate finishing the draft environmental impact statement and moving into preliminary engineering yet in 2009. We are requesting an additional $7 million to the $5 million we received in state bonding last year. Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee, for supporting this project last year. And we hope that this additional $7 million will allow us to, over the next year, complete the environmental work and preliminary engineering.
Do you have another person to testify?
Mr. Chair, Katie Walker, the project manager, is here to answer any questions the committee members may have.
Representative Hortman, or Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, and you had mentioned supporting different corridors, and this is one, members, where if you're trying to be successful and get popular support, as Commissioner Dorfman said, Commissioner Dorfman, Representative Simon, and others have done a stellar job of bringing the business community on. It's no coincidence that this is on the cover of the magazine, Representative Simon. The business community, local chambers of commerce, local governments, civic organizations. This corridor really wasn't on the radar a couple of 3 years ago, but it's that really local organizing effort that was done on this that I think has really moved this along. And so that's one of the keys to success. And I think everybody in the room and many members, you know, have their local projects. And, you know, all the data is important, ridership, all of that. But it's that local support all along the corridor that I think is absolutely key to success, not only here at the Capitol, but all levels of government that are needed to move these corridors along. So I think Southwest is the boilerplate for that kind of success, and I think a lot of it is due to Commissioner Dorfman's great work on this. So if you want to know how to get a corridor done, here's the address.
Representative Welty, is that okay? Have we got another governor candidate here or not?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Hornstein. If I could add, there are 200,000 jobs along this corridor, and so it is both about bringing people from the suburbs into the jobs in the core in Minneapolis, as well as making sure that people can access jobs, the more than 50,000 jobs that are in the 62494 corridor in Minnetonka and Eden Prairie. And so this is about commuting in and the reverse commute out. And it is also, this particular line would interline with Central. So when you reach the interchange down by the proposed interchange by the new Twins ballpark, a Southwest train would become a Central train, providing access to the university and St. Paul as well.
Any further questions? Not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Haas, Haas, I mean. House File 2434, Representative
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing our bill today. Our bill is on the North Star Corridor and getting it all the way to St. Cloud. There's many champions on the committee here, as well as in the audience, and I have two county commissioners with me today. This is a match, a pretty solid match for the work that we're proposing. $3 million from the federal government and $1 million from the state. It would be used for a design and engineering and environmental analysis and negotiations and acquisition of real estate property. The job isn't really in negotiations and acquisition of real estate property. The job isn't really done. I would make an amendment to their brochure. However, if I could make an official amendment to the brochure, it says Phase 2 extension to St. Cloud. My amendment would be finishing Phase 1 extension to St. Cloud. So that is not an official, but it certainly is an unofficial vision. Many people had visionary movements of this years ago. A lot of us still see things happening that are not predicted, and that is the massive flow of students from North Metro to our colleges and from our colleges back. That's not only St. Cloud State, St. John's and St. Ben's. Not thought of very often is the connecting of the veterans hospitals, and that will also be numerous veterans and veterans that deserve a convenient ride. And with that, I would have my fellow past commissioners. I was a commissioner. You know, when I quit being a commissioner, I moved out of good looking and allowed the gold medal to then be awarded to other people. So, Mr. Schmid.
Welcome.
Representative Haas, thank you for that. Chair Leader, members of the committee, thank you for taking the time to hear us here today, and thank you for your past support. We enjoyed a very great grand opening in November. A number of you were there, and it was a great day. But it was a bittersweet day for those of us who have toiled with this line for so long.
because we do see it as being half completed. We've talked a lot about stations here today along the way. We have two stations that need to be completed, one in Becker, one is partially completed in St. Cloud. When we complete those stations, we need to have the train there. We have received $3 million from the federal government. We need a $1 million match. We feel that that's a pretty good bang for your buck. If you refer to our packets, first of all, I will take Representative Haas's suggestion as a friendly amendment, and please do look at it as the completion. If you turn one page in your packet, you're going to see a resolution that has been passed unanimously by the NCDA making the completion of North Star to St. Cloud their absolute number one priority. And that was done without exception. We have communities that are all signed in up and down this line, a number of counties and a number of cities that are all members and townships that are all members of this joint powers. So we would appreciate your consideration for our request today. Thank you.
Commissioner, I didn't hear your name, but I'm just curious, did you pronounce it Schmeising or Schmeising?
Schmeising. Commissioner Felix Schmeising. I'm a Sherburne County Commissioner.
No, I recognize that. I was just curious because you got E-I, and I was wondering how you pronounce E-I because I got I-E.
It is spelled wrong.
That's right.
And it was seventh grade till we could even spell it wrong. It was
which wasn't that long ago.
Commissioner Earhart?
Hi, Mr. Chair. I'm Dan Earhart again. I'm the chair of North Star Development Authority, County Commissioner Anoka County. And mostly here, thank you so much for the support of North Star. I think we were very, very good partners with the state and the federal government, local, the Met Council, and getting North Star completed to Big Lake. And, of course, we never anticipated stopping at that time, and we're looking forward to continue the line and get it all the way to St. Cloud. I think one of the most important things here today is that I listened to a lot of these projects, and the federal money is, in many of these, has been iffy. This money is in place. The $3 million is here. We need to match it, and we need to continue to get this rail line completed to St. Cloud. And that is what we're trying to do, and working in partnership with you as a part of the state legislature, as this bonding committee, and get this done. We've always been about as an entire plan for this entire metro area of Minnesota, and fit into the overall rail plan for the state of Minnesota. This fits it perfectly.
Commissioner Earhart, I have a question. What does that entail to extend? Do you have to go through a lot of negotiation? You don't have to renegotiate with the railroad, but with the feds, I presume. What are you running into, or will you run into, or not?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do have to negotiate again with the railroad. They will have to establish a price that they need, as we did with the initial part of North Star. We have bought a perpetual easement. We, of course, have to continue to pursue for federal money. In fact, in the last 2 days, we've been meeting nonstop. Mr. Yontos has been involved in those detailed negotiations as to how to proceed with federal federal financing, or at least that portion of it. And that negotiation is done in conjunction with the Metro Transit, the Metropolitan Council, and other people, and MnDOT to move that along.
Do those negotiations go smoothly, or are they, like before, slow or what?
They're going productively, Mr. Chair, and I think that we have to make a decision whether we pursue financing from the federal government through the full program or go through what we call a small starts. And I believe we'll look at a small starts program to proceed with this. It's simpler. It's not as as complicated.
Mr. Chair, if I just might add to that. When we get this match and we get this money, really, that's when the negotiations with the railroad will become begin in earnest. We have not done a lot of negotiating to this point.
Do you have another gentleman that's going to testify?
Just a couple comments.
Mr. Chairman, just that the templates for negotiations and all the different pieces were put together in what we call Phase 1. Mm-hmm. And the team was there. The team is just ready to work to complete it all the way to St. Cloud. So you asked about negotiations with Burlington Northern. It should go much easier simply because the template is there. The team players are there for both sides. We just need to sit down and move forward now.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is where this issue of confusion about where you under what pot of money you put a particular project, but Met Council operates North Star, but this money in the bill is going to MnDOT. Is that still our understanding? One operates, the other builds.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that is correct. This upcoming year, Metro Transit will take over the operations of it. At the time that the federal dollars were appropriated, MnDOT was in charge of the commuter rail, and it made most sense to go in that direction at this time.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair, I think that's where, on an ongoing basis, eventually, I hope we don't have to hear every single bill of every part of the system, but that we think in terms of there's a Metro Transitways system and there's an intercity rail system, and there are lots of projects under all of them, and the pieces of it might be on different lines. But then we will have to be fairly clear under whose jurisdiction both construction and operation goes. And I think that is that kind of messy governance thing that we still haven't kind of come to grips with. I think for the purposes of this, it sounds like we're clear that at least the construction piece falls under MnDOT.
Mr. Chair, if I could, very simply, whatever the committee or the legislature wants and how you want to structure this, we'll work with it. We're working with a system that's in place, and we'll make it happen.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, can you just give us a quick update, a quick snapshot of how everything is going with the North Star line and the ridership? And can anybody do that right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's going very well. We are seeing about 2,200 riders a day, and we're anticipating that we'd see 2,400 riders a day by the end of calendar year 2010.
Representative Nelson.
Along the line of the question that Representative Welty had, Mr. Chair, I shared this earlier with Commissioner Earhart. My brother rides the North Star line currently when he goes to work downtown a couple days a week, and he said that he has a complaint, and it's the first complaint that Commissioner Earhart has heard. His complaint is it goes too fast, and he doesn't have time for his morning nap. So it's been very successful.
Good.
First complaint I've heard.
Any further questions? Not. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members. Thank you.
See, Representative Haas, do you want to stay up there?
Yes, I will.
We're trying to accommodate you, you know. You had a good nap.
Thank you very much.
Now you got to get to work. And that's number 2504. We're on airports now, finally.
Yeah, thank you. 2504 is the St. Cloud National Regional Airport. A lot of people thought it was a local airport, but it's certainly a regional airport. When I look at the St. Cloud Regional Airport, I call it the new airport. And when we go out, when you're out at the Tech College or touring in that area, and across the field there is softball fields and baseball fields, I call that the old airport. Now, how did it get to be the old airport? Well, it got to be the old airport because land was not purchased to protect it. Now, my daddy said human beings are the only animals that you can skin twice. So we do not want to get ourselves back into that fix of where we're going to allow the crush of development around the airport, then can no longer afford to buy the land, and then have to move. That's a recognized fault of airports. So you have been generous in the past and wise in the past to invest in regional airports, and St. Cloud is one of those. Matter of fact, my first year as a representative, at the very last minute, there was
money put in for a purchase of land around that airport. We are on a match of 1 to 1. We're asking for $2 million. We're matching at $2 million and intending on buying 800 acres. Now, we know that this doesn't need to be done today, but it cannot wait till it's an emergency, because once you wait till it's an emergency, you can no longer afford to do it, and then you have to move it. So it's that good planning ahead on a rotation of whatever airports that you're doing. With me today, we have a testifier to give us a few details about the airport and answer questions. Raymond?
Before you start, Representative Hawes, as I remember, there was some problems between the three counties, or the city and the county, the three counties in that corner. Is that in this area? And I say it's a whole section of land you're buying, basically. Are you going to run into problem with that county board again, as far as taking up whatever county? What county is it in?
It's in Sherburne County.
It's in Sherburne.
Yes, and I think the question was between Haven Township,
right,
and the county. And I think that there has been pretty clean negotiations now, and I don't think that's, at least that's stressful.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ray Strege from Shorty Elliott Hendrickson, also the consulting engineer to the St. Cloud Regional Airport. The proposed land acquisition is within the areas defined by the St. Cloud Regional Airport Master Plan. There is major latent demand at the St. Cloud Regional Airport. The service area for this airport is approximately 1.3 million people, as compared to approximately 300,000 for the Duluth Airport and 800,000 for the Rochester Airport, as defined by the State Airport System Plan. By contrast, Rochester and Duluth have approximately 150,000 boardings, give or take a few tens of thousands, and St. Cloud has, as of this last year, less than 20,000. If the infrastructure and the airline service were available at this airport, we would certainly see activities serving the northwest portion of the Twin Cities at that level of activity. So as Representative Haas said, this bill is an attempt to learn from our past mistakes and to prevent the loss of compatible land uses around the airport. The land to be purchased are open at this time, but there is, as most airports do, it attracts a lot of development. So what is possible now financially in the future, in the near future, probably will not be financially possible. This land is being purchased in prior to construction. At the time of construction, this would be eligible under the federal requirements, and at this time, this is a 95% FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, grant program, 5% local. So when we're talking about leveraging their portions of the project, ultimately will be at a 20-to-1 ratio. So thank you for your consideration of this bill.
When you say that, though, that's not in the purchase of the land, that's in construction, right?
Mr. Chairman, members, the FAA will participate in the land acquisition that supports the construction. So the master plan shows extension of the existing primary runway by 1,000 feet, a new parallel runway of 7,000 feet, and an extension of the crosswind runway by approximately 4,500 feet. So at the time the construction occurs, the FAA will allow the community to use the monies that it put into the land acquisition to be reimbursed for that land acquisition, and that can be part of the local share of the construction.
Yeah, that clears that up, right? Any questions? Representative Mason?
I have a question. Recently, I know I was in a discussion regarding this airport. My understanding is that some of the service was dropped because it's just as easy for people to drive from St. Cloud into the Twin Cities Airport. And given the fact that we're looking at putting high speed, yeah, the rail, et cetera, getting you better other transportation conveniences out there, and once that comes in, will that impact, will that make the airport less important than it is now?
Mr. Strigge?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's a two-part answer to that question. Delta Airlines has now canceled, no longer provides service to the St. Cloud Regional Airport as of December 31st, 2009. This is the world's largest airlines, as they frequently advertise. Tomorrow there will be a meeting with Delta Airlines and the nine communities within Minnesota that have scheduled airline service. Two of the other locations, International Falls, let me restate that. One location, International Falls, has, as of this past summer, received notification from Delta Airlines that they are terminating service. This allows participation in another program. I don't want to get too technical. They are continuing to receive service. But in the process, Delta indicated that they will only serve the community as long as they have the turboprop aircraft that they're currently using available. And that they're being phased out of the system within the next 2 to 3 years. So we have, except for Duluth, Rochester, and Minneapolis-St. Paul International, the other six airlines are served by the turboprops. And the question as to service in the future becomes a big question mark, and that's within the next couple of years. So it's going to be a statewide problem, not just St. Cloud. The second point is, as far as access to the air transportation system, the rail and the airport serve different purposes. If you could visualize getting on the trying to access the air transportation system at MSP by using the rail, you have a family of four people, each with two suitcases. You get on the rail at St. Cloud, you go down to Minneapolis, transfer to the light rail, go to the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, walk to the terminal building, go through security. So it significantly slows the timing. It becomes a significantly greater amount of time, and because of the luggage and so on, it becomes much more of a hassle. It's not the hassle-free environment that we see at the St. Cloud Airport right now. And depending upon the time of day, if you're departing anyway up in from Anoka, Maple Grove, so on, if you have a flight out in the morning and a return flight in the afternoon, as you know, the traffic going up to St. Cloud in the morning is not a problem. The traffic coming back from St. Cloud in the evening is not a problem. It's the easy way to fly. There are serious negotiations going on right now with ExpressJet, which would serve the community of St. Cloud with nonstop jet service to Chicago O'Hare Airport. And that's something the community is working on very, very diligently.
Any further questions? Not? Thank you.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Ray, Representative Sterner. House File 2484. you have a slide presentation?
Is that we do, yeah. We look like we need a little more excitement, so we got a three-dimensional presentation coming up. It will be very, very good. I can start talking once we get it squared away here. So.
You know you get billed back by the hour on that.
Okay, is that right? Very fast, dude. Thank you, Chair, Leader, and members of the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. I'm here to move House File 2484.
Yeah, you don't need to move it because we can't, we won't vote on it, but
okay,
explain
okay,
the bill.
All right, just presenting it then. But it's for the Rosemont Park and Ride Lot and Transit Shelter, and it's for $909,000 or less, whatever it takes to build it. And this park and ride is in our downtown district. And with me, I have our city administrator, Dwight Johnson from Rosemont, and my community development director from Rosemont, Kim Lindquist. So they'll be kind of doing a presentation. But I just will probably give some of my personal background. But prior to coming to this great body, I was on the Rosemont City Council for 4 years and on the Park and Rec Commission for 6 years before that. So I've had 10 years of working with the city of Rosemont personally, and I've lived in the district for 41 years. It's a need that we really need for the district. It's the southeast part of our district, and we have did all the planning with it. I mean, we're right on our trail system. We're right next to Central Park, as well as Erickson Park. It's connecting the two transit districts, and it's high density. But I'll turn over to the professionals, but it's within walking distance of many shops and coffee places, etc.
Okay.
So we still.
Oh.
Okay. Trying to load up here. Then I guess the other thing that's significant is Rosemont has been in the transit district since the inception of it with MTC, the Metropolitan Council, and then now we've been in an opt-in of MVTA. And the city, other than using our armory facility where Red Bull's home office is out of, that they're out of it in Rosemont, we have no transit dollars to show in our community. There are some buses that try to come through, but everything else has went to other communities, including one community that has two transit park and rides, and they just have recently been into the transit district. So I'm hoping if you haven't made your list up, I'd like to see if this is number one on most of your lists here by the time we get done with this presentation.
One is last.
Or 15.
Okay. 15. Okay. Oh, 15. Okay. 15. Wait it up. Okay.
Is your presentation is the same as this, right?
This. Yeah. Okay, everyone has a handout in that thing, so. Thanks for your patience.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm Dwight Johnson, City Administrator for the City of Rosemont. And since our technology isn't working, we will just talk from these slides that you have in front of you, if that's all right. The first slide is really just an introductory slide. Rosemont is about 22,000 population right now. It shows that we're in Dakota County, right in the heart of growing Dakota County, and we are, of course, a growing city. We've been a member of MVTA, Minnesota Valley Transit Association, since its inception, and as Representative Sinner said, we've been paying overall about $1 million a year in various motor vehicle sales taxes, property taxes, and that sort of thing that support transit per year. What we're trying to do here is we're looking to construct our very first park and ride facility in Rosemont. And currently, we're using our community center lot a little ways away from our downtown area, but that's just a very temporary fix. It competes with parking, with other community-wide events, and indeed, that whole facility is shared with the National Guard, and sometimes they need the whole lot for themselves, depending on what they're doing. The second slide shows that really our area is influenced and serves two transit corridors. On the left in the orange line, you see the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit Corridor. And then the blue line coming down from the north really follows Highway 3, And that's this new South Robert Trail transitway that you've had a reference to before this afternoon. And that goes through the heart of Rosemont, right through downtown, and that star in the middle is where we propose to have our new park and ride. It is located right in the middle of the developed portion of our community. The third slide shows kind of a greater context here. This will certainly help Rosemont and Rosemont's downtown, but we do feel that it will certainly help a whole area outside of Rosemont here, too. If you can look at the, I'm sorry about the small size of the graph here, but the little stars to the west and north of Rosemont represent the other park and rides in the area. And the proposed one is the large one at the top of the oval that we've outlined. We think we'll have a travel shed that goes well to the south and southeast of Rosemont, down into Farmington, Empire Township, and parts southeast of Rosemont. If you look at this picture, what you realize is that really east of Pilot Knob Road, if you're familiar with Dakota County, there are no park and rides. And Pilot Knob Road, by the way, would pretty much match up with Snelling Avenue if you're going straight north. If you could cross the river straight, you. So the way to think about it is, in Dakota County, there's nothing east of the equivalent of Snelling Avenue or Pilot Knob Road right now. So when you look at the park and rides throughout the whole metro area, we have quite a vacant area around here that isn't served right now. The next picture just shows the lot that we're proposing. It's right directly south of our city hall. It's ready to go. We own the land. We accumulated and aggregated that land at a cost to us of about $950,000. And that is our contribution to the project in addition to some early engineering and planning that we've done. The next slide shows just a little concept plan. It is a remnant parcel. It immediately abuts the railroad tracks in Rosemont. It's about 100 stalls, a little over 100 stalls. The price tag overall with a shelter and some improvements to the adjacent street on the west side there, we believe will be in the vicinity of about $1.1 million. Again, it's right in the middle of our town, across from City Hall, and we think this is a very good piece of land for this particular use. The next slide below that shows some development elsewhere in our downtown area. This is a new project that's called Waterford Commons. It's a fairly large public-private partnership, and it shows the example of the kind of housing that we have in downtown Rosemont that would benefit from this. This is 20% affordable housing, just opened up within the last year, and certainly has a transit-dependent population. What we can't show in this picture is that even closer, probably less than a half a block from the proposed park and ride, is a senior five-story building, senior apartments, that would certainly be a transit-dependent population as well. So that's just a quick overview here. I wanted to point out that, unfortunately, our mayor, Mayor Drostic, could not be here today. He did write a letter, and you can certainly review that. And I think just in closing for my part here, the executive summary is we do think that this has regional significance beyond Rosemont. It's very definitely shovel-ready. The land is free and clear. It's ready to go. There's nothing complicated about it. We are offering a local match in the form of the land, which is almost one-to-one, so it's almost equal to the cost we're looking for here. I know the question was asked before, is this in a pedestrian-friendly environment? It definitely is. We have sidewalks all over our downtown, and just this last year, we fixed and repaired and improved quite a few of them in the downtown area on this very street. And finally, Representative Sterner did mention, I guess, our equity argument. We have been paying close to $1 million a year in transit fees and taxes for a number of years now, at least 6 years that I know of going back, and a lesser amount for many more years before that. And I think what we're hoping for and looking for here is just a small return on our investment. So we hope that counts for something, too. Thank you for your consideration.
Any question? Representative Mason?
Mr. Chair, whoever wants to answer this. I know that you're currently part of the MVTA. In their long-range plan, do they have any provisions for putting any type of facility in your community in the next near future?
The MVTA is very much a partner of ours. They know about that we are here today. Mr. Branning is the chair of the MVTA, and you've heard from him twice today. He had to leave, but he says, and the board has said, that they fully endorse this. Their only plan is the same as this plan. They have no other plan besides this. They have it in their capital plan, I think, 3 years from now to do it. But again, it depends on capital funding coming from somewhere. We've been applying for other grants, but so far, no luck. CMAC grants and that sort of thing. This is our best hope right now of doing this anytime in the near future.
Any further questions? I see you've got grain elevators east of the. That's not university, that's a farm.
Fleego grain elevator has been since 1927. It's a family-owned business, and they're right there. They sell pets and grain and horse food and all kinds of things.
Is that in the city limits, too?
It is, right.
Any further questions? Not? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Reader.
And we got the cleanup man coming in. We'll give you all the time you want till 3:45.
Well, Bernstein. Mr. Chair, members, I talked to Commissioner McLaughlin. We're going to boil down our 3-hour presentation to maybe just an hour. That's a Paul Wellstone line, everyone. thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll very briefly.
Oh, you brought Commissioner Laughlin back.
That's right. Huh? Well, members, by the way, so I know there's a little controversy about Commissioner McLaughlin and Commissioner Stenglein. I think if you just take a look at Commissioner McLaughlin, I think it speaks for itself. The winner of that contest.
The comparison is still the question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think the winner of that contest, it's pretty obvious, so we won't need to.
You want to hear the replay on a tape of Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chairman, I got a call from Commissioner Dorfman, my colleague. She warned me about this controversy, and she said she took no position on it. I said it was very discreet of her to do that.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members, and again, thank you very much. We are the last bill, so if you can just bear with us. This does not have a bill number assigned yet, but it's very, very important to the region. Again, let's keep in mind that while this is in the city of Minneapolis, this is regional infrastructure. This is my third 35W bonding bill, and the reason 35W is so important is that it is the busiest both automobile and transit corridor in the metro area, and we have over 200,000 people using this corridor every day, and so it's extremely important that we address both congestion, automobile congestion, as well as building out the transit infrastructure, and that's what this House file does. It addresses both automobile congestion and building transit infrastructure. The transit infrastructure is a station at Lake Street. This is not included in the funding that was approved for the UPA project, the Urban Partnership Agreement, and we are going to have buses coming in from Dakota County to downtown, and we want them serviced. Service also at Lake Street. We have important plans for transit-oriented development at this location as well. A possible streetcar is in discussion that could potentially connect the West Calhoun Station on the Southwest Corridor to the Hiawatha Line at Lake Street. We have the Midtown Greenway at this location, our busiest bicycle commuter corridor in the region. We have several large employment nodes with the healthcare industry and other redevelopment envisioned for this area. So it's very, very important that we have a multimodal station at Lake Street, that we improve the access to the freeway at that location. And Commissioner McLaughlin has been working on this for many years, and he'll detail what's going on here.
Representative Hornstein. I'm trying to figure out, how does Lake Street cross 35W? You got an overpass, or you're talking interchange? I'm trying to, I don't recall how that, what goes
well,
on.
Well, I'll have Commissioner McLaughlin get into the details, but right now, if you're traveling on I-35W, you actually go over Lake Street.
That's what I don't know.
And so, again, there's a, if you look at the bus infrastructure there, it's not much. It's a shelter. So I think we have a lot of improvement to do. But you'll also notice if you're trying to get off of Lake Street coming from the north, there's no ramp there. And if you're trying to get onto Lake Street going northbound, there's no ramp there. So there's some mistakes I think were made in the when I-35W was originally constructed, and I think we're trying to rectify that as well. So, Commissioner McLaughlin.
Run east and west?
Excuse me?
Doesn't Lake Street run east and west?
Yes, but to get on from Lake Street, there's no way to get off of 35W if you're coming from the north, and there's no way to get on to North 35W from Lake Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner, right.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This request will get the we'll get work moving to accompany some federal funds that have already been allocated to try to correct some of the sins of the past, as Representative Hornstein described, this lack of exits and entrances at Lake Street to 35W, but also to rectify a serious problem both in terms of safety and the effectiveness of the UPA project. Right now, the UPA project has stations in the middle on the median of 35W. Proceeding north from Dakota County, there are going to be stations, enhanced stations in the middle. There's an enhanced station at 46th Street for this bus rapid transit system. At Lake Street right now, you have to pull all the way over to the edges of the road. That's where the bus stop is. There wasn't enough budget in the UPA project to create a hub station at Lake Street. And so what you're going to have is buses that are going to have a dedicated lane that you've invested in, the federal government's invested in. They're going to be zipping along very efficiently. And then from 46th Street to Lake, which is 16 blocks, the bus is going to have to cross four lanes of traffic to get to the bus stop. And then it's going to have to proceed back into the middle and get downtown. So that's a safety problem. Metro Transit bus drivers will tell you that's not particularly desirable. And it's going to cut into the effectiveness, and I think, frankly, hurt the reputation of bus rapid transit as a strategy here in this region, because it's going to slow those buses down as they in rush hour as they try to cross this traffic, which is seriously backed up each and every morning on 35W. So this is a proposal to design the station in the middle as it was originally planned in the UPA project, but had to be cut out. And I think that works well. It's also to design the connections to the buses. Lake Street's one of the busier bus lines within the region as well. Number of bus lines there. So we're trying to connect that. And then there's going to be design work done on these renewing the connections from Lake Street northbound onto 35W and off of 35W onto Lake Street southbound. We have a partnership between the City of Minneapolis, MnDOT, and Hennepin County on this. We're doing some design work right now. That the initial design work is being funded through a grant that Congressman Sabo was able to obtain for us some years back, but we're finally able to move forward on it. But this will allow this to go forward. I think it's going to really enhance the integrity of the UPA project, the 35W busway, and allow us to move forward. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Do you have further testimony?
Mr. Chairman, nothing further. I think Commissioner McLaughlin did cover everything. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't figure out. I mean, this is a major problem. Why it wasn't included in the design of the UPA? I mean, it just confounds me.
Madam Chair, my understanding, confirmed by Mr. Nukla, is that it was a lack of funding. The original request to the federal government was on the order of $200 million, and we received, I think, $135 million. And that's the orders of magnitude. And so some things had to fall off the table, and this was one of them. And I would invite you to go out there. It's literally a naked staircase up an embankment, and you stand up there in the wind at 5 below 0 this morning. It is not a pleasant place to be.
I mean, I totally understand where it is, and I understand what you're. But I mean, if the project didn't have enough money, you'd have thought then that they should have dropped off portions that were further away from the most congested area. I mean, ultimately, we have to design a program that works. and they designed a program that put the money somewhere else further south, I think, and left a mess.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, my name is Marta Nukula, Hennepin County Public Works Administrator. UP also has come with a tight time frame too. So in order to deliver the federal government requirements, this design was not ready. So you cannot do that given the time frame for UPA. That's another reason. Not only, you know, money, that's one reason. But also time frame too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mr. Chair, it was a two-year time frame, and most of the infrastructure is completed already. It's very significant. The second and Marquette piece of this was especially important to us, and that is completed. But again, that's streetscaping. It's a lot easier to do that than build a larger multimodal station.
Mr. Chair, it is my pet peeve about Washington funding. They get an idea out there, they throw some money out, everybody scrambles to put a project together to get the federal funding and meet their timeline. And this is kind of an example of why that's not a good idea. I mean, that whole idea of letting MnDOT and Met Council and having a good long-term thoughtful, you know, priority setting, that's a good thing. And I think my sense is Washington has been doing more of that, and it's not necessarily going to help us locally with our planning and response and construction and operation. It just, anyway.
Further questions? Any further comment? Not, I guess.
Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For the members of the committee, just to reiterate, you have that sheet 15 is your major project, the number 15, not number one. I mean, it's your priority. And drop them in, what do you say, 426 under the, in Abby's, by her door. No, put them under the door. They're slipping through under the door. And anything that comes in late, we might not be able to process. I mean, we need them tonight. So if you fill that out, and I think that completes everything we have. Representative Hausman, I think that's the total of the Finance Committee that we have before us. And nothing more going on in the interim till we get into session, as far as I know. So unless anyone has any comment or question, thank all you for sticking with us.
Do you happen to know what your agenda is on the meeting on the 9th?
Beg your pardon?
Do you happen to know what the agenda item is on the 9th?
On the 9th? Oh, MnDOT Council overview, Abby says, right.
There's a very significant event that evening, and so I thought you might want to note your calendars for...
you mean...
Paul, welcome back.
Oh, I thought you meant the chamber dinner.
No, this one's fun.
Well, thank you, members of the committee. Be sure and get your sheet in. Meeting's adjourned.